using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, the 22nd of October, year of our Lord 2021, day 585 of America held hostage and the world. Today we're going to give you some very powerful ammunition for these religious exemptions. We're going to talk about some more tactics that employers are using in coordination with the White House. And the pushback has accelerated, and we see a desperate despot, Biden, angrily responding to this. And we have some very important information, a very good question someone asked, something I haven't covered. We're going to get into this. Antibodies. How do they know about the antibodies? And the Nazi experiments, even though they're admitting it and then denying it after that, these Nazi experiments, these bioweapon experiments, are still ongoing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I want to begin first, though, with some headline news. And I have to say, Roy Potter sent this to me, and when I saw it and paid attention to it, I thought I should have covered this already. These secret flights of underage migrants. Now, we've had flights, and we've shown the flights of people being brought in, transported around the country as the border is wide open. I have not talked about the border for the simple reason that there's not anything that we as individuals can do about this. And there evidently is not going to be anything that the GOP is ever going to do about it. We've seen them passively sit there and use it as a wedge issue. They hold hearings about it. They whine about it, but they do nothing about it. And that includes Abbott here. And so I looked at it and it's like, this is not really what we need to be focused on. We need to be focused primarily on the issues that are affecting life and liberty. And that is this lockdown, the remaking of our society with this. But, of course, the open borders is a part of that remaking of open society. And this story about secret flights of underage migrants really is important to be talked about because it shows the character of this beast that we're fighting, the American government. Just absolutely reprehensible what they have done. And so what they're doing in a nutshell is they're having planes that are taking off late at night when most of the other planes are not flying. And in some cases, it's been reported that they're doing it in the wee hours of the morning, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Residents have reported these planes coming in. And it's even stranger when the reporters at the New York Post started following the people that are getting off of the planes, the young children and teens, with a handful of men in their 20s. Who would they be? And perhaps traffickers managing all of this. But as they followed it around, it got even stranger where these buses were going and what they were doing. So here's the story. The Post saw last week two planes land at Westchester County Airport. They had originated out of Texas. The passengers who got off appeared to be children and teens, with a small portion appearing to be men in their 20s. Westchester cops stood by as the passengers, whose flights arrived at just before 11 o'clock at night and just before 10 o'clock on Friday, that was on a Wednesday and a Friday, got off and piled into buses. Some of them were later seen meeting up with relatives or sponsors. What is a sponsor? In New Jersey, or being dropped off at a residential facility on Long Island. A post-analysis of online flight tracking suggests that around 2,000 of the underage migrants have arrived at the airport outside of White Plains on 21 flights since August the 8th. But it's the clandestine nature, especially, that raises questions about this. The recent surge in unaccompanied minors They said there have been 37,805 unaccompanied minors caught entering the U.S. from Mexico, sometimes after being abandoned by professional smugglers known as coyotes. So they said as these buses came in the wee hours of the morning, they said some of them are going to the campus of Mercy First, which is a nonprofit sponsored by the Catholic Sisters of Mercy, provides housing services for children, adolescents who are victims of societal problems. And, of course, what we know about CPS also being involved, caught, I should say, from time to time, involved in child trafficking. So here's where it gets even stranger. One of the buses left the Westchester Airport, and they barreled down the Hutchinson River Parkway, which is off-limits to commercial vehicles, at speeds greater than 75 miles an hour before crossing the Throgs Neck Bridge. Later Saturday, a similar scene played out in Florida. And so in Florida, they had these planes of young children. In Texas, where the border is wide open, remains wide open all the way through Trump's administration. I mean, we had caravans. He did nothing. We had nothing but a bunch of, rhetoric, symbolism about a wall which isn't going to really stop people anyway. Bring the military home, set up quick barriers around the border, which is what I said. You do two for one right there. Having a presence there at the border is really going to be the only thing that's going to stop it. Nothing is going to stop it 100%, but that would be more effective than doing a wall and then walking away and leaving them to go over it, go under it, go around it. And, of course, it's pretty easy to go around it when you've got about a 2,000-mile border and you've got about 1,500 miles of it open. It's a 1,500-mile wall door with a little bit of a wall. But let's talk about what happened in Florida, because this is even stranger. They flew into Jacksonville. And then they got on a bus for a two-hour ride to Tallahassee. Now, I ask you, is there no airport in Tallahassee? Why would they fly to Jacksonville and then take a two-hour bus ride to Tallahassee? There is a Tallahassee airport. There's a Tallahassee International Airport, as a matter of fact. So it doesn't have anything to do with the size of the plane. They could have gone there, but they didn't. So they go to a different city. They put them on a bus, drive them for 2 hours to a second city. All of this in the dead of night to avoid anybody seeing what they're doing. Now, when they get to Tallahassee, they went to a detention center where it's a gated thing. It's topped off. The walls are topped off with barbed wire. Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis expressed outrage when he saw this report. He said, "If the Biden administration is so confident that their open border policy is good for our country, then why the secrecy?" And that's the key thing. Why the secrecy? Why the late night flights? Why are they transporting them? Why are they flying then, even then, into one city and then transporting them to another? And why are they rushing them under cover of darkness in these buses in New York? Why is the Biden administration, he said, or a spokesperson for him, said, why is the Biden administration refusing to share even the most basic information about illegal alien resettlements in communities throughout our state and the entire country? On Wednesday, the Post also saw two buses leave the Westchester Airport carrying about 100 passengers who arrived on McDonnell Douglas MD-83. One bus stopped at the Thomas Edison service area off the New Jersey Turnpike, where migrants got off about 12:45 a.m. Again, about 1 o'clock in the morning. Over the next 2 hours, they were driven away in cars by people who met them there. So they go to a service area off the Pikeway. And at 1 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the morning, cars show up and take them off little by little. And furthermore, nobody seemed to show any identification to any officials who were overseeing this. Now, this just reeks of human trafficking, doesn't it? I mean, this is not just open border. We don't care who comes in, just bring as many people as we can in so that we can have division, so we can collapse the economy, collapse the country, have civil war. It's beyond that. This is now human trafficking. And, of course, nothing will be done about it either. You know that. And I'm telling you this so that you understand the nature and the character of our government when it is talking about parents being domestic terrorists because they oppose the transgender agenda, because they oppose the weaponizing of our schools as institutions to foment race war and revolution. So they put them in cars with people who show up, show no identification, at a rest stop. They drive off in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night, and then cars come up little by little and they just take them away, different places. A woman who lives near the airport told the Post on Monday that a flight arrived there around 3 or 4 that morning and it was shaking the house and it awakened her 8-month-old baby boy. She said he's been waking up for the last month around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock because of the noise. I got used to the regular airport noise, but these planes or jets sound very different. They're lower, they have more bass, and they're coming in the middle of the night. Meanwhile, we had Merrick Garland, this corrupt attorney general, who stonewalls any questions about conflict of interest over the order that benefited his son-in-law. Remember, his son-in-law is one of the founders of this Panorama Education that is pushing this racist curriculum for civil war, as well as the LGBT agenda. So he refused to answer questions when he was brought before Congress about conflict of interest. And, of course, this Panorama Education was, he was one of the co-founders of that, and he is running that, his son-in-law. They're making about $30 million, well, $27 million from more than 1,000 school districts. If I remember correctly, it was about a quarter of the school districts in the country are using this curriculum. And just before Garland made his statements intimidating and threatening people who speak up against this perverse curriculum, calling them domestic terrorists, just before that happened, his son-in-law got $60 million additional funding. That's big business. Big business. So as one of the people talking to Garland said, we now know that that company publishes and sells critical race theory and so-called anti-racism materials, although they are racist. They're as virulently racist as anything that was ever published by Nazis or Ku Klux Klan or any group, any racist group, as openly racist. It's just, you know, it's okay because it's against white people. So, we now know that it sells critical race theory materials to schools across the country. It works with school districts nationwide to obtain and to analyze data on the students without parental consent. See, that's another aspect of this. Not only does he have friends in high places that are pushing out his curriculum, friends in high places that are intimidating critics of their curriculum, not only are they making money selling the curriculum, but they're also making money getting data about the kids. Another level of this. So the senator who was questioning him on this, I'm sorry, not senator, representative, Congressman Mike Johnson, Republican, Louisiana. Johnson pressed the attorney general on whether he sought ethics guidance concerning his son's business before he sent out his controversial October the 4th memo, which directed the FBI and the U.S. attorney offices to hold meetings with federal, state, and local law enforcement leaders within 30 days to discuss ways to combat what the Department of Justice described as an increase in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school board members, teachers, and workers. So this is another kind of child abuse, isn't it? That's another kind of human trafficking. And don't be so quick to blame parents who, because they want their kids to have an opportunity, they hand them over to, and they're in a third world country, they hand them over to these coyotes and hope that the coyotes are going to take them to America and that things will be better for them. But they don't really know. These coyotes might have a different agenda. These kids might wind up as sex slaves or other types of slaves. Who knows what will happen to them? And if you turn your kids over to these educational institutions because you want a better economic future, I'm telling you, it is fundamentally no different than that. You don't know what these coyotes, I mean these teachers, you don't know what these coyotes, these school boards are going to be doing with your kids, and it doesn't matter what you don't. Now, don't do that. I'm sure that when the parents handed over the kids to the coyotes, they said, now don't put them in prostitution rings, okay? Don't have them selling drugs and using them as front men for your drug operation. Don't do any of that, right? You promise you're not going to do that. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We got laws against that, right? Happens anyway. You know, we got laws against critical race theory in some states now. Happens anyway. These people are going to do what they wish. To be wise about this. Republicans on this committee have sent the Attorney General 13 letters in the last 6 months. 8 of the letters, we've got nothing. They just gave us the finger, he said. And you're not going to get anything. These people are stonewalling Congress. And Congress has more capability than you do as a parent to bring these people in line. They're going to stonewall Congress. They're going to stonewall governors who try to push against this, legislators at the state level. There's one solution. Get your kids out. Don't turn them over to these Marxist LGBT coyotes, these pedophiles who are grooming your kid, these racists who are training your kid to hate based on skin color, and then shut these institutions down. If there's any institution that needs to be defunded and shut down, it's these government schools. He pointed out that Garland had assembled a snitch line to be used against parents within 5 days after a left-wing political organization asked for it. And Johnson said, if that's not political, I don't know what is. One of the incidents, of course, it's become pretty famous. You know, they said, well, you got these, look at these violent parents. And, of course, one of these violent parents that they beat to a pulp and handcuffed and arrested got angry. They got violent with him. He got angry because his child had been raped. His child was raped by a male who wore a dress to get into these areas that we used to keep segregated by sex. And the school board knew about it. And the school board allowed this to happen more than once because they covered up for this guy. As a Babylon Bee says, I'm a little worried about what my son is learning in school, says a dangerous domestic terrorist. I'm just a little worried. The radical insurrectionist went on to say, you know, teaching kids to be racist and all about graphic depictions of sex seems to be a little bit problematic to me. So she was quickly added to the FBI's most wanted list. Experts say she may be a part of a growing number of deranged extremists who violently question the government's ownership of their children. Attending the open comments portion of a school board meeting. And so what's the solution to this? Well, see, the Republican establishment will tell you that the solution, Bill Bennett, has got an alternative curriculum. There you go. And this is a bad joke. This is a bad joke. Bill Bennett, the former Democrat who became a Reagan czar at the Department of Education, who presided over the Department of Education that Ronald Reagan promised to strangle in its crib as it was a newborn monster in the Carter administration. Instead, he and Bill Bennett nurtured it into adulthood. It was something like 8 times larger. I don't remember the exact multiple when Reagan left than it was when he went in. But he grew it into an adulthood. And Bill Bennett was right there at the center of all of it. And so now he's got a fix for all this stuff. You know, Merrick Garland's son-in-law has made about $100 million, so Bill Bennett is eyeing that pot of money and saying, hey, I can do better than that. I can offer a curriculum that these people will love. Let me tell you something. You need to get people like Bill Bennett, Merrick Garland, out of your life, out of the life of your child. Get these people out of your child's life. You don't want Bill Bennett teaching them any more than you want Merrick Garland teaching them. Neither one of them have any values. This is a bad joke. Bennett launched The Story of America. Let me tell you something. These textbooks, whether they're coming from the left or the right or somebody, whatever, even if they're just propaganda. They're mindless propaganda. They're boring propaganda. You remember textbooks, don't you? If you want to get an education, if you want your kids to get an education, go to the original sources. I don't need this. I don't need my food to be put in somebody else's mouth so they can chew it and massage it around and then regurgitate it back into my mouth like they're, you know, mama bird or something. That's what these textbooks are for. Yeah, you know, the little birdies in the nest and they're, you know, they're spitting it into their mouth. That's what textbooks are. It's vomit. It's regurgitated vomit. Go to the original sources. You want to know what life was like around the creation of this nation history? Go back and read Jefferson's notes on Virginia. Go back and read de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. They're honest observers. If you want to know what happened in the Civil War, forget the textbooks. Go back and read the diaries of the people who lived it at the time. These people were far more intelligent than the people who were writing the textbooks, and they were there. They know. They have something to say. You can look at their perspective. Get the diary of Mary Chestnut, one of them. You could take the one I've mentioned many times, 3 Months in the Southern States, by Colonel Arthur Fremantle. I mean, there's just tons of original stories. These people did not waste their life on social media. They weren't sitting there the whole time, you know, looking at social media. They did things. And when they weren't doing things, they wrote. And they were far more intelligent and educated, far more educated than most of us are today. It makes for fascinating reading. You'll be interested, your kids will be interested. But these textbooks are nothing but boring, regurgitated propaganda. And they have no content in them. Yeah, the people who wrote these things are going to have a perspective, and you know where that's coming from. Instead, the textbook presumes that it is some objective, disinterested, and authoritative source of information. That's nonsense. Nonsense. They're boring. Yeah, don't memorize a bunch of historical dates necessarily. Yeah, it's good to have some chronological context, but there's far more to history than dates. So a lawmaker born in the USSR during this Merrick Garland hearing said the FBI is starting to resemble the old KGB. Mr. Attorney General, this is Victoria Spartz, Republican of Indiana. She was born in the Soviet Union. Mr. Attorney General is someone who was born in the Soviet Union. I am disturbed, very disturbed, by the use of the Department of Justice as a political tool and its power as the police state to suppress lawful public discourse. The FBI is starting to resemble the old KGB with secret, warrantless surveillance. Wiretapping, intimidation of citizens and school boards is the latest example. Is this something new? Is this something that the FBI has just started doing? Did they just go off the rails under Trump? Or has this been something that has been there all the time? If you go back to Harry Truman, what did he say about the FBI? In Harry Truman's day, back in the 50s, right, or 40s, I guess, I don't know. He said, we want no Gestapo or secret police. The FBI is trending in that direction. They're dabbling in the sex life scandals and plain blackmail. J. Edgar Hoover would give his right eye to take over, and all congressmen and senators are afraid of him. That was Harry Truman when he was president. So, you know, took over before... For FDR died. See, that's what I'm saying. It's not so much. It's more important to know what he said about the FBI than it is to know when he was president. He took over before World War II ended, right? He got reelected. So he's doing a little bit into the 50s, mostly into the 40s. And I don't know when he said that. The important thing is to know what he said about the FBI. The important thing is to know what the FBI is like. The important thing is to know what J. Edgar Hoover is like. That's the important thing. But on the test, I'll ask you the date that he said that. She said, it's interesting that in the Soviet era, back to the legislator speaking to Merrick Garland, the United States criticized the use of domestic terrorism concept in the USSR as a tool to suppress free speech and political dissent. In your recent statement opposing the Texas anti-abortion law, you said it is the foremost responsibility of the Department of Justice to defend the Constitution. Do you plan to defend the Second Amendment rights, which are explicitly protected by our Constitution, as vigorously as you do abortion rights? Yes or no? I tell you, these people, it didn't happen under Trump. We didn't have a defense of the First Amendment as the First Amendment was removed from us. And think about that. Think about how important that was. It was happening throughout his administration, but they did it explicitly and without trying to hide it. In 2018, just before the election, to manipulate the election. nobody in the Republican Party, including Trump, did anything about it. There were many things that they could do, especially Trump. Even as an individual, he had the power to do something about that. He had the power to make another social media outlet like Gab to make it viable. Or he could have done his own, as he's just now trying to do with this thing called Truth. It's set up like Twitter. And is if you put out, instead of putting out a tweet, you put out a truth. And then instead of retweeting it, you put out a retruth. He is so juvenile. What an idiot. Anyway, he could. Why didn't he do this before? Or have Jared do it? Yeah, hey, Jared, you want to make a couple $100 million? Let's start a social media company. We can do it just with my celebrity. Or he could have gone to Gab, right? And he could have moved away from the platforms that were censoring him. But he didn't do that. He could have done something. He should have done something. He had a duty to do something as president. But even as a celebrity, he could have done it without any strings attached. And so as we saw the First Amendment being destroyed, as he, in the Second Amendment, for the first time ever, did gun control by executive order of a part that was never even, something that never was even regulated under the Obama administration, an attachment. As he trumpeted the efficacy of red flag gun confiscation and on, taking away our religious exemptions, our medical exemptions for vaccines. Do you see how these people, left and right, are trampling our liberties? You know, going back to this this quote from Harry Truman, John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute wrote back in 2016. Now, remember, this is before we saw a lot of the stuff that was happening. You know, we didn't know anything about how FISA and the FBI were weaponized against Trump at that point in time as a political organization. So this is before that happened. It is after the 2013 perjury by James Clapper to Congress, lying under oath to Congress, no charges were ever brought. Statute of limitations was allowed to expire on that 5 years later. They didn't do anything by 2018. He walked free. But we also had the Snowden leaks that happened a couple of months after that to show that he was lying. So here we are. That was all happened in 2013. All the stuff that we learned about the FBI and Pfizer coming after Trump and his organization, that was still yet to be revealed, even though some of it was starting to starting to happen at that point in time. But here we are, March 2016, and we know what these people are like. That's why he begins with a quote going back to the 40s from Harry Truman. And the article is America's Gestapo, the FBI's Reign of Terror. And so he says, you might be a domestic terrorist in the eyes of the FBI. Now, this is where we were in 2016. Everybody's now paying attention because they've reached the point of calling parents who were speaking back to the school board domestic terrorists for exercising their free speech. But back in 2016, he said you might be a domestic terrorist. You know, the terms anti-government, extremist, terrorist are being used interchangeably in 2016. So you might be a domestic terrorist if you express libertarian philosophies, statements, bumper stickers, because we'd already had a fusion center. Say, be on the lookout. For anybody who's got a Ron Paul bumper sticker or a Chuck Baldwin bumper sticker, you know, they're domestic terrorists. So if you have those kinds of bumper stickers, if you exhibit Second Amendment-oriented views, if you read survivalist literature, if you show signs of self-sufficiency, stockpiling food, ammunition, hand tools, medical supplies, if you fear an economic collapse, if you buy gold and barter items. And remember, this is 2016. These people are looking like geniuses now. They're not domestic terrorists. They were predicting the future, which we're now living in. If you subscribe to religious views concerning the Book of Revelation, you know, that's mark of the beast. You know, this absurd idea that people would have to get some approval from government, some mark from government in order, the mark of the beast government, in order to be able to buy, sell, and travel and things like that. Who would? Yeah, that's crazy. Voice fears about Big Brother or big government. If you espound ideas about constitutional rights and civil liberties, if you believe that there is a New World Order conspiracy, all those things were things that the FBI was using in 2016 to label people as domestic terrorists. He didn't go back and say, you know, this is happening. This is what he wrote in 2016. You can still see it. Hasn't been flushed down the memory hole yet by Google. And now we've added to that, if you speak against racist curriculum designed to create a race war, if you speak against a pedophile curriculum that is part of the LGBT agenda, now you are a domestic terrorist. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and I just want to say thank you to the people. We've had several things that have come in by mail. We had a generous contribution from Jeremy. Thank you so much. And I've not updated the gas gauge, so it's moved up another notch. Thank you so much to the people who've contributed. And you can find all the links to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's basically all that website is right now. It's just links to the show, where you can find it live. Audio and video, where you can find the podcasts and where you can find the video archives. We put the full show up each day on four different platforms, and we break out anywhere from 5 to 8 different parts of the program. When we put up the full show, we also list it by time code, so you can see where the topics are if you want to jump to something or you want to find it later. And so let us know if that is useful to you, because they're wondering if we need to continue to do that part of it. We will continue to do it if it is useful to people. So let us know. And we will soon have an announcement about another platform that will be coming up. So we thank you very much for your support. Again, you'll find the places where you can support us there. And we have people who contacted us. We just had a couple people the last couple of days saying, how can I support you from another country? Because being banned by PayPal and Venmo, PayPal specifically, it makes it difficult for people to contribute internationally. Subscribestar works, but some people are having trouble with that. So hopefully part of this new broadcast option will help people if they want to support us with that. We'll have more details about that coming up. I want to give you some powerful ammunition for religious exemption. This is an article that is put together by John Rappaport. I got to say, John Rappaport has done, I think, a wonderful job. I think he's one of the best researchers, especially this last 18 months to 20 months over this stuff. He has been spot on and dead accurate about this stuff, unfortunately. And so this is new evidence for infanticide and the creation of fetal cell lines used for the COVID vaccine testing. And I want you to pay attention to this. We will separate this out. But this is, if you have any questions or any challenges about the ethics of this fetal cell line, this should dispel any of that. This is very, very powerful. And just understand, this is what they were doing back 50, 60 years ago. It's worse now, and it's still ongoing, as I pointed out. We still see the contracts are coming from the NIH, from the FDA, looking for fresh, not frozen parts, creating transhumanized mice. This is continuing. But let's go back and look at what is involved in this, the creation of this fetal cell line. And this is a quote from 1986, Gonzalo Herranz. He is a professor. At the time, he was president of the Committee of Medical Ethics of Spanish Doctors and also on the Permanent Committee of Medical Ethics of the European Community. And this is how what he said about how these fetal cell lines are obtained. He says, to obtain embryo cells, embryos from spontaneous abortions cannot be used, nor can those obtained by means of abortion performed via the vagina. In both cases, the embryo will be contaminated by microorganisms. The correct way consists in having recourse to a cesarean section or to removal of the uterus. Only in this way can bacteriological sterility be guaranteed. In either case, to obtain embryo cells for culture, a programmed abortion must be adopted, choosing the age of the embryo and dissecting it while still alive. In other words, when he says a programmed abortion, this is murder for hire. This is the process. This is still going on, as the Center for Medical Progress pointed out. And it was so devastating that the state of California, with Kamala Harris, and now with the HHS head, Javier Becerra, as Attorney General. The two of them were Attorney Generals at different times, but both of them came after the Center for Medical Progress to shut them up, to intimidate them, to stop this from being done again, to defend Planned Parenthood, because Planned Parenthood owns these people. So he goes on to say, given these premises, the fact that you have to know, you have to choose specifically the age of the embryo, you have to do a C-section, you have to then dissect the baby while it's still alive. He said, given these premises, we face a dilemma of whether the deliberate, systematic destruction of a human creature to obtain cell material can be justified, when it is recognized that this is of great interest to fundamental research and for the diagnosis of some human diseases. You see the, see how we're weighing this? So we have public health, because this could be used for fundamental research. It could be used to help all of humanity. On the one side, we have public health. On the other side, we have the individual. And if you decide that public health outweighs the rights of the individual, that they can cut apart a baby while it's alive in the interest of public health, because that's the ethics of these people. Then we're back to Joseph Mengele and the concentration camps. We're back to the end justifies the means. You will either respect the individual, or you will live under a horrific dictatorship that has no moral ethics at all. So he says, when it's recognized that this is of great interest to fundamental research and for the diagnosis of human diseases, are research and diagnosis of such great value that they justify the destruction of human beings, of individuals? That's a rhetorical question, I hope. See, the problem is, it's not a rhetorical question for people like Anthony Fauci or Donald Trump or Joe Biden. They don't have a problem with any of this stuff. They willingly know about it. They brag about it. So that was 1986. A guy who was president of the Committee of Medical Ethics of Spanish Doctors and vice president of the Permanent Committee of Medical Ethics of the European Community at the time. So John Rappaport writes, so what happened exactly in 1972 or 73 in the Netherlands, where an infant girl was aborted and her kidneys were used to make a cell line that would be used going forward in the testing of vaccines? The cell line is called HEK293. HEK stands for human embryonic kidney, and has been used to test COVID vaccines. He said, I've already presented evidence for concluding that the abortion involved removing the living infant from the mother's womb and taking her kidneys, which of course killed her. The evidence rests on the realization that in order to extract viable and useful kidney tissue, the baby had to have a functioning blood supply, which meant she was still alive. Are we different from the Aztec communities, where they would sacrifice children or they would sacrifice healthy young people for prosperity, for the good of the community? You're going to be the one that we sacrifice. We'll cut the heart out of you alive and then throw your body down the steps. Are we any different? No. It's fundamentally no difference whatsoever. Oh, we do it in the name of science. They did it because of superstition. That makes all the difference in the world, right? Okay. The evidence also comes from knowing many other abortions have been carried out in order to harvest tissue for medical research by murdering living babies. That is ongoing. I have found a very informative article, February the 9th, 2021, at the Center for Bioethical Reform, UK. It is entitled, What the Heck, H-E-K, Human Embryonic Kidney. He said, H-E-K 293, this is from the article, is a human cell line created by using a kidney from a dissected baby in the Netherlands between 1972 and 1973. It is the second most common cell line. It is used extensively in pharmaceutical and biomedical research. It is also used in vaccine creation and cancer research. It was used, along with other human cell lines, to develop a genetically engineered spike protein that the mRNA vaccine codes for in the original development stage of the vaccine. The new technology, quote-unquote, Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine were tested on HEK293 before they began human trials. This testing is ongoing for all new batches. All new batches are still getting this testing. Make note of that. Finally, the old technology, AstraZeneca vaccine, grew a weakened viral strain in HEK293 cell culture. And they say old technology, in other words, it's not... But from what I, you know, what I have shown you is that the difference in technology is the way the mRNA is delivered. They both use mRNA. You know, the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson piggyback it on adenovirus, whereas the Moderna and the Pfizer wrap it in a PEG, polyethylene glycol. It's pegylated. Polyethylene glycol itself can cause anaphylactic shock, so that packaging itself is dangerous. But they all use the new mRNA technology, just a difference of the way they deliver it. Continuing back with the article, the kidney in question was dissected from a healthy Dutch baby of unknown origin by the team at Leiden University in the Netherlands in 1972. Despite the inclusion of the term embryonic in the title, the baby in question was probably 12 to 13 weeks old when she was killed, so as to secure functioning kidney cells. The man in charge of the research was named Alex Jan van der Ebbe. He is still alive. He is based in Holland. When questioned on the matter by the FDA in 2001, Dr. van der Ebbe confirmed that it was an intentional abortion, but he gave hazy details about the exact experiment. He said, so the kidney material, the fetal kidney material, was as follows. The kidney was with an unknown family history obtained in 1972, probably. The precise date is not known anymore. The baby, as far as I can remember, and I use that term, he calls it a fetus. I call it a baby. Fetus is Latin for baby. Let's just not obscure the reality of what's going on here by using Latin terms. The baby, as far as I can remember, was completely normal. Nothing was wrong. The reasons for the abortion were unknown to me. I probably knew it at the time, but it got lost, all this information. And so the writer of this article, What the H-E-K, what the heck, says, extracting and growing living cells is incredibly difficult. In order to give oneself the best chance of success, you need to ensure the child is healthy, fresh, intact, sterile. They keep using that term fresh. The NIH, the FDA, under Fauci, under Francis Collins, these other people, and these pharmaceutical executives, Scott Gottlieb and Hahn, they kept using that term. You know, we want fresh, not frozen organs. They want fresh, not harmed babies to do their work. Healthy, alive, intact, sterile. As one embryologist and emeritus professor of anatomy confirms, he says, quote, in order to sustain 95% of the cells, the live tissue would need to be preserved within 5 minutes of the abortion. Within an hour, the cells would continue to deteriorate, rendering the specimen useless. And so John Rappaport comments, and he says, this suggests that the abortion in the Netherlands in 1972 was planned, and technicians were standing by. And I would say that to ensure the viability of the tissue, the infant had a functioning blood supply and was alive when her kidneys were removed, killing her. Going back to the article from the what the HEK. In order for the organs to be at optimal viability, the child needs to be dissected and the organs extracted within 5 minutes of delivery. Anesthetic also cannot be used. No painkiller. So as to not change the cellular activity of the organs the researcher wants to obtain. Acclaimed doctor Ian Donald, the pioneer of the ultrasound scanner, claims to have witnessed the WI-38, this is another cell line, the WI-38 dissections in 1962. He said, quote, experiments were being performed on near-term alive aborted babies who were not even afforded the mercy of anesthetic as they writhed and cried in agony. And when their usefulness had expired, they were executed and discarded as garbage. That's why I made the analogy to the Aztec sacrifices. I'll be very careful. We got a baby here. You know, are we all set? What age is it? And what is it that we're going for? All right, everybody ready? All right, remove the organs while the baby is alive, and then when it's done, you know, just kick it down like garbage, like they did the discarded bodies of the sacrificial people in the Aztec community after they cut their hearts out, cut out their beating hearts. In his dense book, The Fetus as Transplant Donor, The Scientific, Social, and Ethical Perspectives, an immunologist, Dr. Peter McCullough, this is not, he spells it differently, and this is not the same Dr. Peter McCullough that has put his career, essentially ended his career by opposing this COVID line. This is a different Dr. Peter McCullough. But he relays detailed descriptions of the methods used on dozens of fetal tissue donors from the 1970s on, including the death of babies between 7 and 26 weeks of gestation, killed by decapitation, killed by exposure, killed by dissection, killed by drug testing, up to the age of 26 weeks. In Sweden, they've been puncturing the sac of a pregnant woman at, let us say, 14 to 16 weeks, and then they put a clamp on the head of the baby, pull the head down into the neck of the womb, drill a hole in the baby's head, and then put a suction machine on the brain and suck out the brain cells. Healthy human babies from 7 to 21 weeks of legal abortion were used. This is in Sweden. Fetal liver and kidney were rapidly removed and weighed. Now, at 21 weeks, what they were doing, or 18 weeks or 16 weeks, was what is called prostaglandin abortions. They would inject a substance into the womb. The woman would then go into mini labor and pass this baby. 50% of the time, the baby would be born alive, but that did not stop them. They would simply open up the abdomen of the baby with no anesthesia and take out the liver and kidneys. This is what I've been saying for several weeks, that in order to get these organs that they're doing now with this murder for hire program from the NIH and the FDA, these Nazi organizations. We have Nazis who are spying on us like Merrick Garland, and we have Nazis who are doing experiments. And they'll be building their Nazi concentration camps if we don't get rid of these people. But I've been saying for a while that they are, or half the time, these babies that Planned Parenthood, University of Pittsburgh, the FDA, NIH are good. Over half the time, they're born alive. Organs are removed while they're alive. The organs are removed without any anesthesia as they kill them. A research paper from the University of Toronto from June 1952, commenting on the method of their experiment, suggests that these techniques were universal with researchers working in close proximity to abortions. No macerated, softened after death, specimens were used, and in many of the embryos, many of the babies, the heart was still beating at the time of receipt in the virus laboratory. I played for you testimony in this trial from the Center for Medical Progress as they're defending themselves against the crime of exposing this heinous procedure by the Planned Parenthood. And the defense attorneys talked to a woman who was there, and she admitted, yes, the hearts were still beating when we took them out. It's entirely reasonable to assume the fetal cell line HEK293 used for COVID vaccine testing was originally produced in 1972 by the murder of an infant. Refusal to take a COVID vaccine on the basis of conscience and religion is more than justified. More than justified. Given the weight of the circumstantial evidence, writes John Rappaport, he said, I would say that for all people of faith, refusal is essential. Lunatic medical murderers and their allies will say anything to avoid blame and the application of true justice to themselves. They will invent science at the drop of a hat. They will couch it in humanitarian terms. They will claim that the ends justify the means. And they will commit gross forgery to pretend those ends are vital. But we don't have to stand by and passively believe them. Billions of people of faith can stand against them. Which brings me to another employer form that was sent to me. And this was, let's see, I've gotten so many of these sent to me from so many different employers. There seems to be a, I don't know which one this particular one is, but this is something that is done online. And they say, prior to starting this request form, we're asking that you provide a third-party letter or statement indicating your participation and adherence to the sincerely held religious beliefs and any information about your religious beliefs that can be uploaded into this form. While not required, it will help us to better understand your position. You know, we just need to know a little bit about you for our files, Mrs. Robinson. Look about you. All you see are sympathetic eyes. Yeah, we want to help you. We understand. So they get all your information, your employee number, your full name, your address, and all this sort of thing. Then the questions start. Name of religion or religious belief. Please provide how your religion or religious belief is referred to publicly, including any specific denomination, group, order, etc. Then a brief, and they will use that to try to find some religious leader to counteract what you're saying. You're a Baptist? Oh, let's see. Yeah, we got a Baptist. Methodist? Oh, here. Catholic? Okay, we have this over here. Mormon? We got that over here, too, right? And cross-reference you against anybody. Jewish? We got that, too. Yeah. We can always find somebody who doesn't care about chopping up babies in any religious institution. We can find people who don't care about violating conscience or about violating your own body. We can always find, we can find people who will rubber stamp that. Usually they're the ones who rise to the top, those types of people. So you want to make sure when you put that there, I would stress that you follow Christ and the Bible and that your affiliation with these people, these religious organizations, is secondary at best. And that's the way it ought to be in real life anyway, to honestly tell you the truth. brief description of religion or religious belief. Please provide the primary tenet and philosophy or belief of the religion or religious belief that you ascribe to. So that's good. You define Christianity for them. And do it in a way, as I said before, you know, if you need some help, look at Ray Comfort, the way he shares the gospel with somebody who's never heard it before. And so you can use that to share the gospel with them. Turn it into a positive. Because they probably need some help if they're putting people through this and trying to judge people's religious convictions. They probably do need to hear the gospel. The good news. Length of time you prescribe to this religious belief. Next question. How does vaccine conflict, and they don't say the vaccine, they don't say this vaccine. How does vaccine conflict with religious beliefs? And so At this point in time, I just gave you some great stuff here about live vivisection of a human baby, about the ends do not justify the means. You can say, I view this the same way I view the Nazi experiments in the concentration camps, the same way that I view an Aztec sacrifice or whatever. They want to know if you had objections to other vaccines or medicines. And I think it's important to tell them, you know, in my particular case, you know, have you ever had any other vaccines or medicines, any other shots? Have you ever received a vaccination in the past? Yeah, I got polio, I got smallpox, I was a child, I didn't have any say-so in that. I even got vaccines to get a passport. But I didn't know what I know now. Once I know what I know now, once you know what I just read to you, you can't go back, can you? Sorry, I just ruined that for you. I just ruined that for you. You cannot in good conscience do this now that you know. There's a lot of people who didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, Christ is our justification before God. Fortunately, we don't have to live a perfect life. But it is always wrong to violate your conscience. And there are always consequences, especially for people who are Christians. You know, there's people who are the wicked prosper. The wicked will prosper their entire life in many cases. You'll have people who, you know, thinking Rockefellers and Gates and other people like that, they will prosper their entire life. But those that God is working with, he will chasten. He will punish us if we violate our conscience. And so, you know, you say, well, now I know. Now I know. I didn't know the use of fetal cell lines. I do now. So my past history is really irrelevant. Every day is a new beginning for people who are in Christ. But that doesn't mean that I sin willfully. It doesn't mean that I violate my conscience. Don't do that. What I knew before is irrelevant based on what I know now. I know this now. And I would suggest that you put in there when they want to ask you, well, you know, you had vaccines before, right? And you didn't have a problem with it. Well, I didn't know what it was, but I do now. And I would put this in there, and I would say, and dear reader, so do you. Whether or not your conscience is pierced, you, as well as I, will stand before God and answer for what we do. And the end does not justify the means. And child sacrifice and experimentation for the public good is the ethics of Nazis. So I will oppose that with every fiber of my being. You can tell them that. Tell them that. Tell them, I know this now, and so do you. Give them the case. Give them a little bit of what this is about. I don't know how much room they give you to reply to this thing online. Then they want to explain your objection to the COVID vaccine over others in this form. Well, I'll just say, first of all, vaccines use dead or weakened pathogens to train the natural immune system. This mRNA injection, in the words of Moderna, reprograms your body to manufacture the vaccine. And this is my second objection on a moral basis, that these vaccines are reprogramming my natural, my mRNA, and the natural aspects of my body. So put that in your own words. Don't plagiarize anybody directly, because in case two of you are listening to the same person or watching the same person, they'll look at it and go, oh, these people are not sincere. They just plagiarize this. So always put it in your own words. And then, of course, these people are again saying, upload a third-party statement or other religious materials. And if you can't find a pastor, I think you'll be able to find a pastor somewhere who will you can talk to. You need to be identifying people who have discernment about things like this and who do understand what our society is doing and who do find that to be objectionable. Actually, it's a good thing. You can find somebody who knows a lot about theology and has written tons of it, but they are totally clueless and cloistered about what is happening with abortion, what is happening with these vaccines, this pandemic, and so forth. You need to be identifying the people who do understand and who have compassion and who will help you. And you can start a relationship with them, but, you know, you can have, it also says, or others. It doesn't have to be clergy. It can be others who have known you for a long time. They're just looking for a character reference here. They're looking for a Christian character reference. So, you know, you can get anybody who's known you for a long time. And you can use that. This is from someone who is in Raytheon. He says, Dear Mr. Knight, I work for Raytheon. I know you don't have to say it. It's military industrial contract. We received this policy today. Thought you might like to see it. I will not be taking that shot, and I will not be seeking an exemption. I figure 15 years is long enough to have worked for the devil. Onward and upward. And the interesting thing I find about this, and thank you for sending this to me, there's a couple of things that they mentioned in it. Those with approved accommodations will be put on unpaid leave of absence. And so when I start seeing this, I thought, well, you know, they mentioned this several times in this document, unpaid leave, and then layoff. Now, I don't know if all companies are this way. I know that in Italy, they were saying, we're just going to put you on unpaid leave. And, you know, that's one way of not paying you any unemployment, not saying that you're fired. But in this Raytheon thing, I noticed that they said this, said the layoff is voluntary. And then they said the company agrees to not protest any unemployment insurance claims for bargaining unit members terminated for the violation of the company's COVID vaccination policy. So they may, I don't know how that's going to work out with other companies. You might get some of them are going to fight you on unemployment. Some of them may not. I don't know. I've never applied for unemployment. I never decided to try to fight Alex for that. So neither did Travis. So we don't know anything about how that works. But again, they're saying at least at Raytheon. When I was looking at that, I thought, oh, these people are really devious. You know, they can put you on unpaid leave, and then they can say this layoff is voluntary and so forth. But then they do say we're not going to fight unemployment. So that's good. That's good. Biden, however, did a little publicity stunt with CNN. They call it a town hall. This is where they, you know, do everything they can to make him look good. They bring in a friendly audience to cheer whatever nonsense he's able to cobble together in his feeble mind. And the way it was reported by the Daily Mail, they said Biden unleashed his anger at people refusing vaccination on Thursday. Yeah, this pathetic little despot. He also ridiculed people who said that mandates infringed on their freedom. And he says, oh yeah, I've got the freedom to kill you with my COVID. Was that a confession? It is your COVID, right? You guys developed it in a lab, just like you developed these bioweapon vaccines in a lab, right? So it is your COVID. Yeah, you can kill us with your COVID, and you're doing a good job of it, aren't you? Killed a lot of people with your COVID, military-industrial complex, and this research. It doesn't really matter, does it, if the Chinese stole the research, or we gave it to them, or we developed it concurrently with them, or if we developed it, or whatever. It still doesn't matter. There really isn't that much difference anymore between the Chinese government and the U.S. government. They're merging. So, yeah, I have the freedom to kill you with my COVID. Yeah, that's what he says that we are saving. That was really just kind of phase one and phase two of this, killing us with the COVID, killing us with the vaccine. So, yeah, he unleashed his anger. Let me say this old man will soon be answering to God, very soon. He'll be answering for killing people with a vaccine. He'll be answering for destroying the lives of people in order to try to coerce them to get this toxic vaccine, to play his disgusting game of Russian roulette. Every time I look at these people trying to force others to take the vaccine, it always reminds me of that powerful scene from The Deer Hunter. We have Robert De Niro and, what's the other actor's name? Anyway, they're prisoners in a Vietnamese thing, and they're forcing them to play Russian roulette. Very intense. Christopher Walken is who it is, yeah. Really intense scene. And that's the kind of pressure that people are being put under. You're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to play any sports in school. You're not going to have any extracurricular activity. We're going to isolate you over here in the corner. We're going to put masks on you as well. You will be completely ostracized by society. You'll be shut out of society. And as they do this, I can just see the two characters There it is. Oh, that's good, Travis. Thank you. Yeah, these two characters sweating it out under this pressure. And Biden is like that guy going, Mao, Mao, you do it, Mao. You get vaccine now. Mao, you take it. Yeah, you'll answer before God very soon, Joe Biden. Very soon. Biden said police officers and emergency workers who refuse the vaccine, the Trump shot, should stay home or be fired. And as he answered questions during this, he said, yes and yes. Somebody said, should they stay home? Should they be fired? He says, yes and yes to a thunderous round of applause. I tell you, we will stand to the end against this evil mob, like these people in this cherry-picked for this town hall. He said, by the way, I waited until July to talk about mandating because I tried everything else possible. Because, see, the only thing that is necessary in all this has always just been about getting people to take the vaccine, getting people to take the Trump shot. It was always about that. Nothing else mattered. He and Donald Trump are not polar opposites. Two sides of the same coin. The coin being that everybody, everywhere, at every age, Immunization Agenda 2030, Bill Gates, are going to get the vaccine. He went on to criticize misinformation about the death of former Secretary of State Colin Powell. He said he clearly would have been gone earlier had he not gotten the vaccine. Yeah, right. We knew that he had serious underlying conditions and it would be difficult. But of course, you know, they always ignored people who were over 80 with multiple comorbidities during the launch phase of this pandemic deception. A former ESPN reporter compared Biden's comments on the vaccine mandates to that of a dictator. Allison Williams, formerly of ESPN, said Biden's comments on vaccine mandates sound like something a dictator would say. I've never been so jarred by anything a president said. To hear the leader of the free world stand up and say, this isn't about your freedom. I thought, wow, it's always about our freedom. Yeah, this isn't about the Constitution. It's not about liberty because, you know, I'm going to ignore my oath to protect both of those. She said, this is something the dictator says. That's not something a leader of free people says. Everybody acts like this was your choice. You chose not to get it, so go get a different job. She said, that's not choice. That's coercion. Consent is fundamental to everything we do if we want to be a free people. That's right. Coercion is not consent. What was the whole Me Too thing about, right? It was about a casting couch. Well, you got a choice. Get on the casting couch, and you get in the movie, you get the job, or you don't, right? It's your choice, right? It was choice. What are we so upset about, right? They were coerced to do it to get their job, so why should we care about Me Too or any of this other stuff? Why is that reprehensible? We all know that's reprehensible. That's a gut level reprehensible. And yet, is that fundamentally different than what's being done now? Well, you know, you can have the job. You do what I tell you to do. You know, let me invade your body, inject your body, or you don't get the job. It's your choice. Hey, you know, yes, Me Too. This is Me Too on steroids. Florida Governor DeSantis calls for a special session to counter the vaccine and mask mandates. He said, I've had enough of federal interference into state business. The legislative proposals include the provision of reemployment assistance to people who are fired because of this Trump shot mandate. Under another proposal, Floridians who have an adverse reaction to a vaccine would be eligible for workers' comp. Employers who fire workers solely based on the Trump shot mandate would be prohibited from enforcing non-compete agreements against the employees, according to another proposal. And another provision would require employers to provide religious and health exemptions to vaccine mandates. Meanwhile, companies that fail to notify employees about the exemptions would be liable to lawsuits by fired employees. See, they're doing a lot of good stuff in Florida. A lot of good stuff. I don't like the fact that DeSantis, like every other politician of every political party, say, oh, they're great. You know, they're safe, they're effective. It's the only way that we get out of this thing. But I don't want you forced to take it. So I have a problem when they start doing that. And so, you know, you keep your powder dry. Don't get behind these people in gym. But when they do the right thing, cheer what they do. Again, it's not about a party. It's not about a politician. It's about what they're doing. And these are all the right things. What they're doing in Florida are the right things. We need to cheer that. I would cheer this even if it was being done by Biden. If Biden would do something like this, I would cheer him. I've said many times what Ron Wyden did with James Clapper to get him, you know, when he lied under oath. Everybody knew he was lying. And I appreciate Ron Wyden doing that. And I applaud him every time I talk about this. But that's the only thing Ron Wyden has ever done in his life that I agree with. Still, I agree with that. And so DeSantis and the Republicans in Florida have done a lot of very good things. They've been there first, and they've done the most to fight this. President Biden last month ordered OSHA to create a rule, and the rule could affect nearly 80 million workers. And businesses could face fines up to $14,000 per violation. Oh, he wants to go much higher than that. Much higher than that. What was it? Up to $700,000. Lawmakers in Wyoming are also, as I pointed out yesterday, going to hold a special session next week to consider bills to counter the vaccine mandates. So this is a rule. This is a rule. This rule is floating around. And I want to take a moment here to talk about the rule process, because I think this is very important as we look at this rule process. There is a very, very long process about making the rules, and you can find this at the Office of Management and Budget. Before the proposed rule, what happens? How do they? What is in a proposed rule? How does that look like? And then before we put out the final rule, and then we have the final rule, how is it structured? And then after the final rule, who can challenge it and so forth? It's a very long detail. So let me just kind of condense this a little bit for the sake of time, because we have coming on in the third hour, we're going to be talking to Gerald Celente about economic news. What gives agencies the authority to issue regulations? And this is very important. I've talked about this a long time, about how, you know, Schoolhouse Rock, I'm a bill on Capitol Hill. That ain't the way it works, folks. That's the way it's supposed to work, but that isn't the way our government works anymore. That is not even close to the way that it works. As a matter of fact, it didn't work like that when they created that cartoon. The idealized version, the constitutional version, is what they're showing you there. But in reality, We're being ruled by bureaucracies that are writing regulations and rules. And then they also pretend, which they don't tell you in this document, that if you violate a rule, you don't have any of the constitutional protections. You don't have the presumption of innocence. You don't get due process. You don't have protection from excessive fines. So how do they create these rules? Well, what gives agencies the authority to issue regulations? Agencies get their authority to issue regulations from laws, from statutes enacted by Congress. In some cases, the president may delegate existing presidential authority to an agency. This is it. They're abdicating their power to these agencies, because there's absolutely no way that we could have as many laws as we have in the United States if these people had to pass each and every one of them. So they create these massive laws that are, you know, 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 pages, and they drop them, and you've got like, you know, 12 hours to read it. Nobody does. You have to pass it so you can find out what's in it. And Nancy Pelosi, for the first time in her life, maybe the last time, was actually telling you the truth. Because this is what happens. Typically, when Congress passes a law, this is, again, coming from our government explaining how this process works. When Congress passes a law to create an agency, it grants that agency general authority to regulate certain activities within our society. And Congress may also pass a law that more specifically directs an agency to solve a particular problem or accomplish a certain goal. So you pass it, and you create an agency, or you hand it off to an existing agency, and then they'll fill in all the details, as they have the devil as their co-author, right? They'll put the devil in the details. An agency must not take action that goes beyond its statutory authority or that violates the Constitution. Oh, yeah, right. That's why the CDC under Trump and then under Biden put rules about evictions and foreclosures. They don't have the authority to do that. Agencies must follow an open public process when they issue regulations. How does an agency decide to begin rulemaking? Well, it can be all these different things. It could be new technologies, or it could be concerns arising from an accident. It could be recommendations from congressional committees. It could be petitions from a special interest group, or even members of the public. It could be lawsuits filed by interest groups. It could be presidential directives. It could be a prompt letter from the Office of Management and Budget. It could be requests from other agencies. It could be studies and recommendations of agency staff. That's how we get this crushing burden of regulation that we now have in this Byzantine society. How does an agency involve the public in developing a proposed rule? Well, the agency may take preliminary steps before issuing a proposed rule. See, it's all very subjective. Well, they could do this or they could do that, or maybe they don't do that. Who knows? They can do whatever they want. There's really not any controlling legal structure here at all. They gather information through an unstructured process and with informal conversations with people and special interest groups. If an agency receives a petition for rulemaking from a member of the public, it may decide to announce the petition. Some agencies develop proposed rules through a negotiated rulemaking. In this process, an agency invites members of the interested groups to meetings where they attempt to reach a consensus on the terms of proposed rule. That's called a smoke-filled room. We have these meetings in private where we discuss what the stakeholders want to do. And we, you know, if they all agree, all the people who show up, if they all agree, of course they already did because that's why they're showing up, then we'll just do whatever you guys want to do. Sure, you got something that you can contribute here to the party. It may take the opportunity to review the rule. The president may. The president is assisted by the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which analyzes the draft proposed rules when they are significant or when they're due to economic effects or because they raise important policy issues. For significant rules, the agency must estimate the costs and the benefits of the rule and consider alternate solutions. Do you think they've done that? Do you think they've done a cost-benefit analysis of firing 15% of the people in the country? Do you think they've considered any alternative solutions? You know, instead of all of the massive economic upheaval, the damage to our supply lines, destruction of families, budgets, and so forth, what if they just put out some really cheap and effective, I don't know, ivermectin for $3 a piece like they did in India? Of course, we have to pay $15 here, right? But what if they just put that out? Would that be an alternative to doing this mandated firing of everybody who doesn't get their genetic code injection? No, because that's the only thing that matters. This isn't about science. It's not about medicine. It's not about a virus or a pandemic. It's about getting everybody vaccinated. End of story. So the agency may be required to analyze the proposed rule's impact on small businesses. See, I bring this up because these are going to be the things that we use to challenge this. And you don't have to have a national organization to do it. You don't have to have a do-nothing political party like the GOP, AWOL. It may be required to analyze the proposed rule's impact on small businesses, on state and local governments, on families, and on federalism. What does that mean? Well, you may have to scrutinize this based on the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Do you really have the authority to do something like this? It may also need to analyze issues of just compensation and issues of unfunded mandates. Yeah, we talk about unfunded mandates. How about the unfunded mandates on families? How about defunding families by taking away their jobs? Should that be talked about under this consideration period? What is the time period for the public to submit comments? And the reason I got into this was because I stated yesterday that some gun rights groups said, hey, if we file comments and say, we want to come down, we want to comment on this, and I want an appointment with you to do this, I could not find where that was something that was going to be a determining factor or something that they had to do. This is why I went through this whole thing and say, is that really an issue? Because if that is an issue, we need to do that. But there isn't anything that requires them to listen to you. There isn't anything that requires them to do a cost-risk-benefit analysis. All these things would be nice, and they might do it, they may do it, or they may not. You want to know who makes the rules, who your ruler is? That's whoever makes the rules, and these people are ruling us, and they're doing it arbitrarily. So the time period, they'll specify a comment period ranging from 30 to 60 days. Have you seen that for the OSHA rule? The Biden is doing it? No. They didn't do that. For complex rulemaking, agencies may provide for a longer period of time, such as 180 days or more. Well, they haven't done that. Why do agencies reopen comments or issue multiple proposed rules? An agency may extend or reopen a comment period when it is not satisfied that it has enough high-quality comments. High-quality comments. You want to see some high-quality comments? Take a look at the comments on these YouTube videos that are blindly pushing the COVID narrative. I think there's some pretty high-quality comments on there. Tons of them. There'll be thousands of comments pushing back on this garbage, because that's the only way that we can speak back anymore. I'm sure they're going to take these things offline with comments. Anyway, so if there's not enough high-quality comments, or when the public comments make a good case for adding more time, that's when they'll reopen the comments. Do agencies have additional options for gathering public comments? Well, during the comment period, an agency may also hold public hearings where people can make statements and submit data. But they don't have to do any of that. See, that's the problem. They don't have to do it. This is what they would do if it was rational. And again, I don't even like this whole process. This is why we have multiplying laws. And this is why, as Harvey Silverglate said, everybody's committing on average about 3 felonies a day without knowing it, because we've got too many rules. So how do the public comments even affect the final rule? Right? Because now, I've said many times, this process, this way of ruling us through the bureaucracy making rules, is taxation without representation, the fines that come with it. But most importantly, it is regulation without representation. Here's why. They said this process is not like a ballot initiative or an up or down vote in the legislature. An agency is not permitted to base its final rule on the number of comments in support of the rule over those in opposition to it. See, this is regulation without representation. It must also consider whether alternate solutions would be more effective or cost less. Ivermectin would be more effective, and it would cost less. You think they'll consider that? When do final rules go into effect? When an agency publishes a final rule, generally the rule is effective no less than 30 days after the date of the publication in the Federal Register. If the agency wants to make the rule effective sooner, it has to cite good cause. Significant rules, as defined by Executive Order 12866, and major rules defined by the Small Business Regulatory Enforcement Fairness Act, are required to have a 60-day delayed effective date. And so are they going to skip all this stuff? Can an agency issue a final rule without publishing a proposed rule? Yes, these situations may include emergencies. This is why I keep saying, 585 days ago, Trump said this is an emergency. We're still in an emergency. And when you have an emergency, it lets them waive all the comment periods, all the restrictions, all the risk-benefit analysis and all that sort of thing. All that stuff is waived. It paved the way for all kinds of regulations, booby traps they put in state laws, going back to dark winter 2001, just before 9/11. Let them activate all that stuff as well. How is Congress involved in reviewing final rules? Well, under the Small Business Regulatory Enforcement Fairness Act, also known as the Congressional Review Act, new final rules must be sent to Congress and the Government Accountability Office for review before they can take effect. Major rules, ones that are economically significant, like this rule, this vaccine mandate rule, and that require OIRA review, must be made effective at least 60 days after the date of publication of the Federal Register, allowing time for congressional review. In emergency situations, a major rule can be made effective before 60 days. See, again, it goes back to the emergency. Well, yep, we got an emergency, so just forget about all that. We'll do it in the dark. We'll do it secretly. We'll do it immediately. We'll waive all of that because, Trump said it was an emergency 585 days ago. If the House and Senate pass a resolution of disapproval and the president signs it, And the House, the rule becomes void. So they have to. So see how they've turned this whole process upside down? They're making these rules, and they're doing them all the time. And they're doing them in response to special interest groups coming in to try to shut down their competition or whatever. And if you want to get rid of this rule, there's a process. The process to get rid of this rule is the same one that Congress would have to go through with a law. It has to be passed by both the House and Senate, just like they would pass a rule. So shutting down the rule requires that the House and Senate pass a law to shut down that rule. The default state is that the bureaucracy does whatever they wish. And, of course, the president has to sign that. Now, if the president doesn't go along with the House and the Senate to shut down an out-of-line rule, then the House and the Senate have to override that veto. Same process as that is with a law. Same process. So, finally, when do the courts get involved in rulemaking? Individual and corporate entities may go to court to make a claim that they have been or will be damaged or adversely affected in some manner by the regulation. The reviewing court can consider whether a rule is unconstitutional, whether it goes beyond the agency's legal authority. Those both apply here. Whether it was made without following the notice and comment process required by the Administrative Procedure Act, that also applies. Whether it was arbitrary, capricious, and an abuse of discretion. See, all of those things apply. This should be a slam dunk in court to shut down these Biden mandates, but you know that it won't be. It will be determined by the political orientation of whichever chocolate judge you pull out of the box of chocolates or their black robe. You never know what you're going to get because these judges are so politicized. So again, DeSantis, in terms of pushing back against this, he said, your right to earn a living should not be contingent on these COVID shots. We have to stand up for people's jobs and their livelihoods. And he said, I don't think you can wait until next year. That's right. That's right. You've already had, and I pointed out, I read this story yesterday, the Orange County Fire Rescue Chief, Stephen Davis. He lost his job for refusing to enforce the vaccine mandates against other employees. Now, I'm not going to do that. That's wrong. And you're violating the civil rights, prohibition, discrimination of religious views. Okay, well, then you're fired, and we'll get somebody to replace you so they'll fire these people. Davis said to me, this violated more than just the law. This violated their own civil rights. This violated the trust that these men and women have served over the last year and a half on the front lines. The article from RT says DeSantis has been one of the most vocal critics of the pandemic-era mandates, such as mask wearing and the forced injections. A lot of employers, the governor noted, are not honoring exemptions. And he said, threatening to pull Medicaid funding from hospitals. See, he understands the mechanisms, and he's addressing these mechanisms directly. That's their big lever with hospitals, taking away the Medicaid funding. So he says, threatening to pull Medicaid funding from hospitals for not enforcing the vaccine mandate could be illegal. In other words, they're going to challenge that in court, and they should. Question is, why are thousands of postal workers still unvaxxed? You know, we've had this back and forth. Are they required to do this? Are they going to have to do this? So this is a reporter at WND. He said, I spent many hours going through the USPS website, and I still couldn't find an answer to this. Are postal workers subject to the vaccine mandate? So he goes, I want to get a straight answer. I just went to the post office and I asked somebody, and he got a manager who had to wear a mask. And he says, yeah, indoors, we've got to wear a mask, but we don't have to get the vaccine. So questions emerge from this encounter. Why are postal workers exempt from a mandate that is stripping other public service entities, especially the military, of thousands of needed personnel? The second one is, why do I have to ask a postal worker to get the truth? Well, the answer to the second question is very easy. The media doesn't want you to know. And he points out in mid-September, after Biden did this, about a week after he put out this statement, press release, USA Today fact checkers got on it, said claim postal workers are not included in the Biden administration vaccine mandate. And USA Today's fact checker says false. On that same day, the USPS put out an impressive and ambiguous statement on COVID-19 vaccines. After much self-serving blather about the hard work of its 650,000 employees, management said, quote, we're working closely with our union leadership so that once OSHA has their Vaccination Emergency Temporary Standard, ETS, is issued, we can move quickly to determine its applicability to our employees and how best to implement it. In other words, yeah, after they put this out, we'll look to see if it applies to us. And as the writer at WND says, translation, we're not in any big hurry. This ETS, which has not been publicized yet, has been delivered on the 12th of October to the White House. They've delivered the ETS to the White House, but we're still not allowed to see that yet. So the Postal Service say their hands are tied, and they can't do anything about this. But they said, why aren't they being put into this? It's not just that they got a strong union. They pointed out that Trump had called for the revocation of collective bargaining rights by the postal unions. And so they jumped in real heavy to support Biden. And Biden does not want to offend that political base. It's just that simple. Canadian Dock Workers Union says that government should not mandate COVID jabs for them. And I started looking at this. I've thought many times about what is going on at, you know, in L.A., for example, when you got these truckers saying, and you see the video from the guy, and he says, we've been here all day, and you got all these trucks that he shows, and the motors are still running, idling. And he said, we've been here all day, and we can see these cranes up there. And he said, they haven't moved all day. Not a single one of them has made a single move all day. And that was not in L.A., that was in another port. But the people who are there in L.A., close to where these ports are, they said, we've never seen anything like this. This is an armada of these ships out there. It went from like 60 to 80 to over 100. And the people are saying, we've never seen these ships docked everywhere like this. You even had one of them drop anchor on an underwater pipeline and bust it and have an oil spill there. So I've never seen anything like this. What is going on? This is deliberate. Why are these people doing it? This might be a possible explanation. We don't know. But just as these Canadian dock workers and their union say, well, you're not going to force us to get these jabs. Maybe they're doing that against Biden and against Newsom. These are people who have a lot of political clout, and they got $250,000 salaries on average. And you don't criticize them, because if you're a manager of the port and you criticize these crane operators, longshoremen union, you criticize those guys, they can get you fired. So nobody talks back to them. If you're a truck worker, you don't talk back to them. Their managers, quote-unquote managers, don't talk back to them. Does the governor talk back to them? Does the president talk back to them? Are they doing a work stoppage and we're not being told about it? I mean, this is what happened with Southwest. Is this the game that's going on in California? I don't know. It's not possible to know, but we see them explicitly saying that in Canada. Unvaccinated Canadians become social outcasts and the new persecuted minority. This is an interesting article from RT, because after going through and recounting how horrible things are that we've seen over and over again, the COVID totalitarianism that we've seen in Canada and elsewhere, there's in this article at RT, it's absolutely appalling, unvaccinated Canadians become social outcasts and the new persecuted minority. They talked to a woman who is an Italian researcher, and she moved to Canada in 2001. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and so she talked about her concerns about this vaccine, and she had been involved in FDA drug testing. That's one of the reasons why she's very concerned about this. Here's what, and she did it as a patient, not as a medical researcher. As they point out, Italian researcher living in Canada since 2001, who was in that year diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I recently spoke with Valentina Capuri about how the vaccine mandates will affect her. Following her MS diagnosis, she was offered to participate in a trial program for a new medication. Although it was a risky decision, she accepted it for different reasons, including the health care and the medication it would ensure her as a then lone international student. She said the importance of the trial was that, first of all, she said it lasted for 12 years. She said there were a lot of people who had severe effects of MS, multiple sclerosis, and they would have benefited from the medication, and yet they were not able to access the medication for a dozen years. Because you cannot give medication whose effect, if everything goes wrong, can be worse than the cure. You see, this is why and where people have traditionally criticized the FDA. Not just because they take a long time to approve a drug. This has been the pharmaceutical industry has complained, well, you know, we get 20 years, but you guys take 12 years to go through the process. So our patent of 20 years, we got to recoup all that stuff in an 8-year period. And that's why we charge you so much money. That our argument has been made. But then there's the other argument about somebody who has got a terminal illness and they've got a new cancer treatment. And the compassionate argument against the FDA's rigid rules to say, we're not going to let anybody except a few people that we have chosen for the test. Nobody else can opt into this. We're only going to let a few people do this. Even if they're going to die before we go through the process of approving this, we're not going to allow you to opt in and participate in this and the chance that it might save your life. They've always refused. To me, that has always been reprehensible that they would do that. If somebody's got a terminal illness and they want to become another data point in this, you should let them participate in the trial. But they don't. They never have. They would never bend that rule and say, we're going to test a drug on people that has not been fully tested. And that means a long-term test. That means 10 to 12 years. But now they're doing it. Now they don't care. Do you see how our government has been turned upside down? She said, trials like this are something that every other new medication or vaccine has had to endure, and none of this has been done with this particular case. So that's what's made me a little bit suspicious about these COVID vaccines. And she said, and furthermore, because she still does have MS, she said over the past year and a half, she's not been allowed to see her neurologist. All of her medical appointments in the Toronto hospital have been suspended and replaced with phone conversations. She said there's no physical visits, there's no MRIs, only phone calls. And she said, back in 2003, when we had the SARS epidemic, I used to go once a month to the hospital, despite the fact that SARS in 2003 had a much higher mortality rate than COVID. We were still allowed to enter the hospital on a regular basis. None of our visits were canceled back then as they are now. But now you're forcing me to lose my job. You're forcing me to lose my ability to support myself. And because I'm exerting my right not to have an experimental medical procedure done on me, she said, this is worse than fascism. This is absolutely appalling. On top of this now, those needing organ transplants face being denied care if they do not consent to mandatory jabs. And so in the light of all of this, and as we see, maybe it's going to happen with a blockage at the ports in Canada if they force these guys to get jabs. Southwest Airlines has had to cut flights. And I guess we should say, you know, United we stand. Or maybe we say Southwest we stand. American we stand. We're going to stand against this, whether it's United, Southwest, or American Airlines, or any other companies that do this. 1,900 flights in the span of 48 hours, again, canceled. Huge lines across different ways. So Southwest has lost $75 million because of these mass cancellations. And so they're now going to do a lot of reworking of their schedule because people stood up to this. And they have shown weakness on this now. As to how weak they're going to be on it, we shall see. In Indiana, they're recruiting the Chicago cops that are being fired by Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Hey, Chicago police officers, we're hiring, says an Indiana State Police spokesman. No vaccine mandates, lower taxes, great schools, and welcoming communities. So this is what I'm saying. You know, if they kick us out of their filthy cities, of their dictatorial corporations that treat you like a slave or a sharecropper, it could be one of the best things that happens to you. I seriously believe they're going to have hundreds of Chicago cops are going to go to Indiana or other places like that. And they're going to say, wow, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. I never would have done this if they hadn't pushed me out. Just like you got a lot of people, a lot of parents who are saying, wow, we love homeschooling. And I would have never thought I could do it, except they forced me to do it. Well, they're going to force you out of Chicago. They're going to force you out of that hellhole. and they're going to force you into a place where there's lower taxes, great schools, and a welcoming community. How about that? Roughly two-thirds of Chicago's officers have submitted their vaccine status into the database. 82% of those are vaccinated. 82% of the two-thirds. That's not that many, folks. That's really not that many. So, anyway, they said about 4,000 officers have not shared their vaccine status. And the Indiana officials are promising no vaccine, no problem. Meanwhile, in Chicago, as I mentioned briefly yesterday, the Magnificent Mile has been the target of rampant shoplifting because the state attorney, Kim Fox, has mandated that Chicago prosecutors only issue felony charges for theft of property over $1,000. And so these places are turning into, and you know, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, it is a state of anarchy. But it's a state of anarchy and rebellion that is beginning at the top. These people are rebelling against the Constitution. These people, these state attorney general, or as it was in San Francisco, it's a local attorney, a Soros attorney. I didn't look to see whether this attorney general was elected with money from Soros. I imagine he or she was. It's Kim Fox. I don't know, male or female. Anyway, he or she was probably elected with money from George Soros. And so this is anarchy. This is rebellion. And it's the people at the top that are anarchists, the people at the top that are in rebellion. This is what we need to understand when we talk about the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. In Washington State, the coach that I reported on being fired, he now says he's going to sue the college for not honoring his religious exemption. Rolovic and four of his assistants were fired because they did not get the vaccine. Some had applied, but none of the five had been awarded a religious exemption from the rule. Now, when the story was reported, they did say that he filed it 5 days after the deadline. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, that's something that could be on this. That'll probably be litigated in the trial. But I mentioned that because I said, if there's a lesson to learn from this, make sure you don't miss the deadlines. Make sure you answer all the questions and give them all the information, and you'll have a much better case if they deny it when you go to court and sue them. And you should go to court and sue them. Everybody should sue the pants off of these people. I mean, let's just shut the courts. Let's shut the courts down as well with lawsuits over this stuff. It's just outrageous. And meanwhile, sue the Biden administration and all these people for pushing this out. And the letter, it came after Coach Rolovic's request for religious exemption for the vaccine was denied by the university. The institution has also indicated that even if the exemption had been granted, no accommodation would have been made. Well, there you go. So it may not have had anything to do with the deadline in this particular case. But just don't miss your deadline. The athletic director, Pat Chun, they said since at least early April, it became clear that Chun had already determined that Coach Rolovic would be fired. Chun's animus towards Coach Rolovic's sincerely held religious beliefs and Chun's dishonesty at the expense of Coach Rolovic during the past year is damning and will be thoroughly detailed in litigation, said his lawyer. Chun's discriminatory and vindictive behavior have caused immeasurable harm to Coach Rolovic and his family. And I would say that's true of Biden. Biden's vindictive behavior is doing untold damage to this country. Tens of millions of families. It's tragic and damning commentary on our culture, more specifically on Chun, or Biden, that Coach Rolovic has been derided, demonized, and ultimately fired from his job. You know, the demonization was going on with that town hall with Biden, of everybody, right? Merely for being devout in the Catholic faith and having an ethical standard. Meanwhile, Charles Barkley, who's no longer playing basketball, is now hectoring these basketball stars who are standing up for individual liberty. Kyrie Irving is the one that he took on. But, of course, we've also had Jonathan Isaac. Jonathan Isaac, I don't follow basketball, and I didn't realize that like a year or two ago. He was standing up for the flag and standing up for the national anthem while all of his teammates are wearing Black Lives Matter stuff and taking a knee. And he's a Christian, and he is very, very articulate. He knows exactly what he is talking about with all of these issues, very well informed on natural immunity and on liberty and these other things. And I really do applaud Jonathan Isaac and Kyrie Irving. Boy, what a breath of fresh air it is to see athletes who know what's going on. But then you come up with Charles Barkley. He says, as a commentator, he says, first of all, you don't get the vaccine for yourself. You get it for other people. No. This is what the mask was always about. This is why it irritated me to no end and still irritates me when Mike Adams was using InfoWars to say, well, he's screaming about the fact that Fauci and Trump were not mandating the vaccine. Oh, yeah, you better mandate the vaccine because, it's pronounced Kyrie. Thank you, Travis. See, I don't know. I don't follow basketball. Thank you for letting me know it's pronounced Kyrie. Who is that other guy, that basketball player that I thought I got his first and last name reversed. I don't follow these guys at all. Anyway.
LeBron James?
Was it? Yeah, LeBron James. I thought he was James LeBron. I thought, yeah, LeBron sounds like a last name. James sounds like a first name, so I was calling him James. And the crew had to tell me, no, it's LeBron James. When all this stuff was happening, it was Mike Adams. Who knows better? He knows better. And he was screaming, Fauci better get, we need to have these mask mandates. Why isn't CDC and Fauci and all these people putting mask mandates on us? And you better wear the mask. Because if you don't wear the mask, we're going to wind up taking this vaccine. It's going to be pushed on us. We don't want the vaccine, so wear the mask. It's like, are you crazy? I mean, you know that these masks don't do anything, and you know that my mask doesn't protect you. You know this is nothing other than training for the narrative that you got to get the vaccine because my vaccine doesn't protect me. Your vaccine protects me. And that's what Charles Barkley is saying. He said, you don't get the vaccine for yourself. You get it for other people. You get vaccinated for your family first. You get vaccinated for your teammates second. And that's what bothers me about this whole thing, said Charles Barkley. I think everybody should be vaccinated. I'm really proud of the Nets for putting their foot down and saying, we're not going to deal with this half on and half off. The only thing that bugs me is Kyrie, is still going to make $17 million sitting at home. Yeah, sitting at home. All right, we've got about 10 minutes or so before Gerald comes on, and I want to talk about antibodies because I had a listener send me this, and I hope I can get through this in 10 minutes here. A listener sent me a question. Can you cover the science behind the COVID-19 antibodies and the way they're able to test for that? As far as I know, up to this point, they've never shown an isolated virus of COVID-19. So how can they test for antibodies if they have no isolated virus to look at? Or maybe they do have an isolated virus and they don't want to show anybody. All right, so here's, as I looked into this, I did some more research into what these antibody tests are about. I noticed that the Washington Post came up with, this is on the 17th, so this is 4 days ago, Monday, right? Sunday or Monday. Anyway, the Washington Post has an article, antibody test can't give the answers that you want about COVID-19 immunity. Now, the real purpose of their article was to push back against natural immunity. But inside this article, you get some very important information about what these antibody tests are capable of doing and what they're not capable of doing. And, you know, for a while, at the beginning of all this, they're telling, we have these PCR tests, and we realized that the PCR tests were being blown up to a ludicrous point, well beyond the maximum amount that you should run these things. And then we found out, even more damning, and again, it was excellent research from John Rappaport, looking at the FDA as they're talking about changing the tests in December. They said, well, we got 59 different tests, and we can't evaluate their efficacy against each other because they're all testing for something different. It's like, what? Again, we didn't have an isolated virus. So what do we know about this? Well, there's three things, actually, that we know. Number one, We know the genetic code injection produces a toxic spike protein, right? Makes your body produce that. And so your body is going to produce antibodies against that. So we know that, right? So, you know, somebody, when they're looking at the vaccine thing, they're going to see antibodies in response to that spike protein. Number two, we know about those 59 tests that I just mentioned. We know they can't be compared to each other for effectiveness, so they're not, they're all testing for something different. In some cases, they said, well, we had a partial mRNA. Some of them we had a whole mRNA that we're testing for. Some of them we just synthesized, we had a synthesized mRNA that we're testing for. Because we didn't have an isolated thing to send around to anybody. So we wound up with 59 different things that we're testing for. So, you know, we can't compare these tests to each other. So what is up with that, right? Was this the type of thing in that clip that I've played for you? And I don't have time to play it again, I think. I think maybe we do. Maybe we do. Listen to this clip and listen to the very end of this clip.
You have to prove that this works. And then you've got to go through all of the clinical trials, phase ones, phase twos, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade.
Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet.
And it's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative way, because you do need both.
But it is not too crazy to think that an outbreak of a novel avian virus could occur in China somewhere. We could get the RNA sequence from that, beam it to a number of regional centers, if not local, if not even in your home at some point, and print those vaccines on a patch and self-administer.
Okay, so maybe that explains why they got 59 different tests that they're doing, you know, some of them whole mRNA, some of them partial, some of them synthesized. Maybe they just came up with a description of a genetic code, and maybe they beamed that to everybody, right? Here's the formula for what this is. Maybe that's how we came up with all this stuff, beaming it out. Nevertheless, you know that the vaccine is producing a specific toxic spike protein that your body's producing that, are now going to be fighting that thing that's just been tricked into producing. Number two, we don't know exactly what this was. It's going to be all over the place. But perhaps they're looking for something that is, we might have 59 different tests for these antibodies as well, because they don't have an isolate there. So what does it mean to look for antibodies then? Well, let's go to this Washington Post story of 4 days ago. In most cases, however, getting an antibody test to determine immunity is a fool's errand, they said. Said an infectious disease doctors. The tests for antibodies, also known as serology tests, do not provide the answers that most people are seeking. Both the CDC and the FDA advise against using antibody tests to determine one's level of immunity. The disease against COVID-19, the disease caused by coronavirus. So does the Infectious Disease Society of America, which represents infectious disease specialists, so do they. And they say some states like Maryland and South Carolina are conducting targeted antibody testing for specific purposes, but no state is promoting the test's use for residents to determine whether or not they have sufficient immunity or need a booster shot. So then, how do they say that immunity is waning, right? When they say, well, we really can't do a test on this. And again, the purpose of this article is really to push back against the idea of natural immunity. But they go on to talk a little bit more about the test. They say the test might indicate the presence or even the level of coronavirus-fighting antibodies in the bloodstream, but scientists don't yet know what number of antibodies provide protection, and antibodies are protein molecules that the immune system produces to neutralize viruses or bacteria that have entered the body. Antibody levels do help healthcare providers establish whether a patient has immunity against other, more familiar infectious diseases, such as measles and hepatitis A and B, but doctors say our relatively short experience with COVID hasn't yet produced the same information. In other words, they don't know. So they don't have, you know, the serology tests work for something like measles and hepatitis A and B, where it's a known quantity. But there's a lot that they don't, there's this total ambiguity about this thing that we're told. It wasn't isolated, and we got 59 different versions of the mRNA that we beamed over to people. Some of them synthesize it, some of them have partial or whatever. So the same thing that's holding true about these PCR tests is holding true about these immunity tests, these antibody tests. They really don't know. They don't have a test that can identify these antibodies like they do for measles and hepatitis A and B. So we don't know enough about it, right? Or maybe they don't have the isolated virus. Testing for coronavirus antibodies has some benefits, especially for determining whether someone has had COVID-like symptoms, has had an earlier undetected infection, but not for the reasons that many are seeking the tests. They say the body can mount a stout defense against the virus by generating new antibodies in response to a fresh infection. There is more to your immune system response than antibody levels. So again, what is it that protects you? Does a vaccine protect you? No, your immune system protects you. If you have a healthy immune system, they point out, it's going to last. They said it would be wonderful and important if you could test every month 5,000 patients that were 60 years and older and find out who gets reinfections or who gets infections for the first time and see if there's a correlation to what we're trying to measure with these antibodies. And if you found infections, you could say that those people had antibodies below 200. That would be helpful. But see, that would be science. That would be empiricism. It takes measurements, it takes experiments, and it takes time to do that type of thing, to collect the data, to make pronouncements about that. That's not what we're doing now. What we're doing now is a Simon Says. Actually, it's Fauci, but, you know, it's like Fauci says this, Fauci says that, Fauci says the opposite now. We're not doing science. We're not doing empiricism. This is not science at all. They said the problem with these coronavirus antibody tests, say doctors, is that they're not standardized. And again, it goes back to the same thing that we're seeing with the PCR test. 59 different things we're looking for. We don't know what we're looking for, so we don't know what the antibodies look like either. It's all bluff and BS. It really is. Yeah, people are getting sick with something, and we have some very effective treatments that can help them with that. But the vaccine is killing people. The vaccine is being used to murder people. As a matter of fact.
So just chill out. You know, drink a 7-Up. Eat a moon pie. Quit murdering people.
Yeah, that's my advice to the FDA, to Fauci, to the CDC. Just chill out, Biden. Stop murdering people. Stop destroying people's lives. So in Kentucky, they say the Senate passed a resolution in September that would have established residents to substitute an antibody test for proof of vaccination. And this is the purpose of this article, to push back against natural immunity. The doctors interviewed for the story said that without knowing what level of antibodies would provide immunity and without being able to identify these things, right, we don't know what we're looking for. The timing of the vaccinated people said, we're glad that this did not pass, given how few labs can do this test. Again, very rare, right? Very rare. It's like this genetic sequencing to determine if something is a Delta variant. That's not being done. It's very, very difficult. Very few people can do it. It's not being done. That is a press release. The Delta surge is a press release. It's not based on science or measurement or cases or any of that stuff. Anyway, given how few labs can do this test and the issues of test validation, it's good that this bill died, they said in an email. Antibody testing can determine whether someone has been exposed to coronavirus or has received any of the vaccines used against the virus. Some tests detect antibodies created in either case. Others only detect antibodies that are generated by exposure. So again, it's not standardized, and we can't be sure, unlike measles, unlike hepatitis A, hepatitis B. Doctors say healthy people should be reassured that the human immune system remembers what to do in face of a new risk. This is why natural immunity is superior. And I'll just end with this tragic statement here. This is from a listener. My mom, who is 90, died this morning. She was required to get the COVID shot, Johnson & Johnson, for the retirement facility she was to live at this Monday. 36 hours later, she died from the shot. COVID kills is right. Please share this with your listeners. I'm so sorry, Debbie. And she, when I replied to that, she came back again. She said, just so that you know, she just had her physical and she got a thumbs up. No comorbidities. Yes, she was 90 years old, but in good physical shape. I told my brother, if she gets the shot, she'll be dead in 48 hours. She didn't even make 48 hours. She was dead in 36 hours. These people are murderers. Murderers. Yes, there has been a 5,427% increase in deaths following COVID shots compared to all vaccines for the past 10 years. This is another analysis by Dr. Jessica Rose. She has a bachelor's degree in applied math. She has a master's degree in immunology. She has a PhD in computational biology. And she has a postdoctorate in molecular biology. And she's looked at the VAERS data. And she's putting her career online to tell the truth about these lies. And because you challenge the establishment orthodoxy, they will come after you. And so she did a mathematical analysis of this medical data, which is her specialty. She is an expert at this. In one of her previous analyses, she determined that the data in VAERS is underreported by a factor of 42. That would mean that about one out of every eight individuals receiving a COVID shot, a Trump shot, is reporting an adverse reaction. This is the kind of analysis on VAERS data that the CDC and the FDA are supposed to be doing, and then removing any experimental products that are killing and harming so many people, but they're not. These federal agencies are very corrupt. This is an article from VaccineImpact.com. They're so corrupt. You know, $93 billion to $120 billion just for Pfizer and Moderna, just from the vaccines, not counting the other products that Pfizer sells. That's the only thing that that Moderna's making. But they're making money hand over fist with that. But just these two companies, with just those two products, just those two Trump shots, making anywhere from $93 to $120 billion next year, just on the vaccine only. Do you think that has an outside impact? And one more death. A 60-year-old woman died from clots after the Johnson & Johnson. Dr. Michael Kaplan, a forensic pathologist in Michigan, said Sandra Jacobs appeared to have succumbed to, quote, a rare, but nevertheless documented complication associated with a viral vector vaccine, cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, CVST, he wrote in the summary. He said CVST occurs when a blood clot forms in the brain's venous sinuses, preventing blood from draining out of the brain. As a result, blood cells may break and leak blood into the brain tissues, forming a hemorrhage. In other words, the blood clot blocks the drainage, it backs up, and it bursts the vessels. She died 13 days after receiving a single-dose Johnson & Johnson at a CVS pharmacy. Though it took months to confirm it, her daughter knew from the start that her mother died from the vaccine. She said she is a real person. She is not a piece of just like a fictitious political propaganda where they're saying it doesn't exist. It's not true. It does exist. She was a real person with a real life. You know, by the way, she died 13 days after. So, you know, for all those people like John Piper who just want to go on the lying headlines and say, well, everybody's dying is unvaccinated. She was technically unvaccinated. They don't count you as vaccinated for their database until 14 days after your injection. She died in 13 days. So there you go, John Piper. You know, you get your information from Fox, CNN, Washington Post. There you go. She's another one of your statistics. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with Gerald Slinty. Stay with us. We're going to talk about economic issues. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again?
Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Gerald Celente, TrendsResearch.com. He has the great Trends Journal. It's like an online book. Of course, you can go there and look at the articles individually, but it's also set up in a book format. They do it on a weekly basis, and it is comprehensive. There is so much stuff in there, and there is so much stuff that is happening economically. I mean, I've been talking this program about what is happening with the vaccines and these other aspects, but our whole economy is by design being turned upside down. We've had these multiple monkey wrenches put in. So I want to talk to Gerald about what's going on in the housing market, stock market, what's going on with Bitcoin, what's going on with China. I mean, all these things are addressed in many more in Trends Journal. You can get a sample copy of that if you go to trendsresearch.com. Excellent publication. Amazing amount of information that's put there every week. Thank you for joining us, Gerald.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me on. I just want to follow up before we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
CDC group says there isn't enough data yet to recommend COVID booster shots. A group of Centers for Disease Control and Prevention scientists said Wednesday that currently there isn't enough data to support recommending COVID-19 booster shots to the general population. This is from CNBC, Wednesday, June 23rd.
Yeah, now they've got it.
Now they got it. Then these are headlines from CNBC. Here's why herd immunity from COVID is mythical with Delta variant. Achieving herd immunity with COVID vaccines when there is a highly infectious Delta variant is spreading is not a possibility, a leading epidemiologist said. So in other words, the herd immunity is a lot of BS, but they're telling everybody to keep getting vaccinated. Fully vaccinated people who get COVID-19 breakthrough infection can transmit the virus. You know who said that? CDC, right out of CNN. Again, these go back months ago.
Yeah.
But totally ignored right now.
Yeah, everything is.
Totally ignored about these what's going on with this. And the going back to what's going on in the bigger picture, it's destroying life.
Yes, that's right.
Businesses, in the Trends Journal, you're looking at the hospitality sector losing $60 billion in 2021. Mm. Whether it's, and it has nothing to do with supply chain disruptions, which is another load of BS. Because think about it, David. Supply chain disruptions? You mean you can't get the dishware that used to be manufactured in Syracuse, New York, to Tampa, Florida? Oh, no, we don't manufacture anything in Syracuse, New York anymore. That place is turning into a hellhole. We're going to get it from China. You ready for this? We import more clothing and shoes from Vietnam. That's our number two importer of clothing and shoes. Vietnam? Oh, yeah, when I was a young guy, they had a thing called the Vietnam War, where we were taught to hate all those Vietnamese because those commies over there, they're going to take over. Those dominoes are going to keep falling. And before you know it, they're going to be hitting California. We're going to go to Vietnam. We're going to kill over 3 million people. We're going to poison the place with Agent Orange. Oh, and by the way, we'll send our soldiers over there, young guys like myself. I didn't go. And I was too stupid, by the way, to be against the war. I couldn't imagine me. I'm watching these pictures, these guys walking up to water here with rifles over their head and 50 pounds of knapsack stuff on their back. I couldn't imagine being there. Only 58,000 Americans killed there. Oh, and over 300,000 wounded.
Yeah.
And all of their lives screwed up that went over there.
That's right.
But now it's okay to buy stuff from, because we're getting it made cheap, you know? So shut your damn mouth, Salenti. We are low-life pieces of scum crap, and we will do anything to steal money and use slave labor to make it. So we're not going to get it made in America. We could give a damn. All we are slime ball, BlackRock, Blackstones, Buffets, and all the bigs. We don't care about you. Supply chain disruptions. We got to get the stuff made in cheap labor. Bring it over here so we can make our money. Walmart, Target, everybody.
That's right. That's right. And you know, in North Carolina, while they were doing the Vietnam War, North Carolina was this massive powerhouse when it came to textiles. Now, that's been completely eviscerated as well. So now, after, you know, we destroyed Vietnam and killed all these people, both sides, injured people, now we've established them as a slave labor outlet, and we have gone to war with the economy and the industries that were here in America and completely eviscerated and destroyed them. And so now, isn't the next step, I mean, this shortage and scarcity that we're experiencing here, I mean, isn't that something that they're going to do to us permanently? You know, now that they've got their monopolies, that's not going to go away. That's not a temporary thing. I mean, all of this, the shutdown that we had last year, and then the extended of the shutdown that's going on with Biden after Trump initiated this, this is not going away. And they're going to use this as a justification. The virus did it to you. We didn't do it to you. And now you're going to be short of everything forever, right?
That's a very big part of it. But you see, your facts are wrong. They were going to flatten the curve. It was only going to take 2 weeks. Would you forget?
That's right. And it was to save the hospitals. It was to save the hospitals. And so now we're kicking the people out of the hospitals because they don't take the shot. It was always about the shot. It was always about their agenda, wasn't it?
Again, you know, it's they're drug dealers. Again, it's the bankster bandits, drug dealers, the military industrial complex, and what's his name over there? The big tech. They run our lives. We've lost our freedom. And it's global. Mm-hmm. It's global. Look what's going on in Australia. You couldn't make up a better freak show. And look at the freaks running the place.
Yeah.
You know, little nobodies, little Danny Andrews. Look at the clowns we got telling us what to do. I'm going to take crap from a Mitch McConnell, a Lindsey. Did you come out of the closet yet, Graham?
Yeah.
I got to take a listen to a Pelosi, another a daddy's girl born on third base and thought she had a home run. An arrogant, multi millionaires. Her daddy was the mayor of Baltimore at the height of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's one big club and you ain't in it, as George Collins said.
That's right.
The economy. Big. This is important. Talking about inflation. It's, again, supply chain disruptions, barely anything to do with inflation. It's supply and demand, and what's going on is that you have less supply. Why? People aren't going back to work. There is a trucker's problem that's serious.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want it. They're hijacking these trucks. They're shooting people. They don't want it. And they're getting paid crap to do it because they deregulated the trucking industry. And that's what really brought it down.
Mm-hmm.
They used to get real wages at one time. Just like the airline industry. When I was a young guy, there were 150 airlines. I used to fly first class, used to roll down a roast. Or would you like lobster thermidor?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
You flew first class to Phoenix, Arizona. They give you a sandwich wrapped up in plastic and a glass of wine drinking out of plastic. What I'm saying is the whole thing is going down.
Yep.
Now you have all of these people that won't get vaccinated. You had a labor shortage before. It's going to get worse. Now, here's the trend. Unions are going to gain strength again. I said it's supply and demand. Again, in the Trends Journal, the strike's going on with Kellogg. The strike's going on with Deere.
Mm-hmm.
There are like 177 strikes going on right now. Now you look at the people that are among those that are striking and protesting, hospital workers and elder care workers. Mm-hmm. Who don't want to get the vaccination, can't understand why healthcare workers and nurses don't want to get the vaccination. Couldn't be because when I go to the nursing home, this is what the people look like as I go through.
Yeah. Catatonic. Yeah.
That's all they look like.
Yeah.
They see the dangers of these vaccinations.
That's right.
And so what I'm saying is this is big in a lot of ways. And here's the big part of it. There's going to be a real new political movement. That's nothing to do with the two of these corrupt criminal, this crime syndicate that's in charge now. And that's all it is. It's not a government. It's a crime syndicate.
Yes.
But going back to inflation. Remember that little liar Powell, who also did dirty dealings, making money, selling and buying stock before they knew what they were going to say, along with that other little piece of arrogant crap Kaplan you got down there in Texas, and Rosengren in Massachusetts. Yeah. Remember them? Yeah. And they buying stuff. They said it was temporary. This is only temporary, the inflation. Then from temporary, it went to transitory. It's neither. It's real. It's going to stay with us. Oh, did you see gold prices today?
No, where are they?
Oh, they just jumped up about $26.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at what's happened to Bitcoin. You know, I mean, you had the ETF thing that happened, but I guess that was part of a positive story. But I mean, it's just gone straight up in the last several
days. It's not a positive story, the ETF, and people are under overestimating us.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. You're going to get a billionaire or a multi-millionaire. They're going to play the market. That's what you do with ETFs.
Mm-hmm.
Exchange-traded funds.
Because they're not even... let me ask you, from what I saw, they don't even have to hold Bitcoin. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You're betting.
Yeah.
You're betting.
Yeah.
So the big bet, they'll bet that they'll short it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's going to be a big bet to short it at some point. Overall, we see Bitcoin going north. It's going to keep rising. It's going to have ups and downs until they regulate it. And I'll give you the example of the regulation. What's the biggest country now mining Bitcoin?
The U.S.
The United States, right?
All right.
Where was the one before? China.
China, yep.
China banned it totally.
Mm-hmm.
Now China is pushing by the Olympics, when they hold the Winter Olympics, to be all digital cash.
Yes.
So when they all go digital, they're not going to want digital competition.
That's right.
But I don't see that happening in the United States for a while. It could happen overnight. I mean, you never know.
And it did happen overnight in China. I mean, you had what I remember the story where they went to the essentially the you know empty inactivated Bitcoin mining facility that was the largest in the world. And the guy who was running it, the Chinese guy who was running it, said, you know, this thing was cooking. And then just one day they just pulled the plug on it and just went straight down. And it's not hard for them to find the physical places where these things are doing because they require so much power. You know exactly where these big Bitcoin mining operations are. And if they pull the plug on that physically, go in there and shut it down, you're essentially done. I mean, it can pop up some other places, but they can keep doing that.
I invested in Bitcoin, and I bought cryptocurrencies in 2017. Mm. And sad story, and someday I'll give the guy's name. This guy that worked for me, he really screwed me big. He ran my business, and he stole my wallet as well. So we're dealing with that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of dollars because I bought it at a very low prices. But anyway, the
and that's the problem with it, because it's so complicated. People can steal your wallet even without being there. You know, it's
like this guy used to run my business, so he was in full control. I gave him, you know, I trusted him. I knew him since 1990.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the going back to what I believe, I buy, but I'm a firm believer in gold. Mm-hmm. And I don't give financial advice. I'm a firm believer in gold and silver, and that when this thing comes down hard and big, and we're going to have a crash like we've never had before. And I, again, making connections between different fields. When all else fails, they take you to war.
Mm-hmm.
And the war to look for now is going to be coming out of Turkey.
Hmm.
The Erdogan, the maniac running the show over there.
Yeah,
he will not. He's fired central bankers like crazy. Inflation, again, we write about this in detail in the Trends Journal. Inflation in Turkey officially is at 40%. The real number that the world recognizes in the investment world is more like 40% inflation.
Wow.
They just lowered interest rates again yesterday. They lowered them 50 basis points.
Wow.
Or more.
Wow.
The lira now, the Turkish lira, is at an all-time low. Inflation is going to skyrocket, and all of a sudden, you're going to see Turkey bombing away in Syria, fighting against the Kurds and anybody else they could start a war with.
Yeah.
When all else fails, they take you to war.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, there is a slimy little low-life daddy's boy with a pair of cojones probably much smaller than a mothball, a little nobody arrogant piece of crap by the name of George W. Bush. He's the president of the United States in 2001. He gets into office. In October of 1999, the headline story in the Trends Journal was dot-com bust coming. We said the dot-com bust would happen by the second quarter of 2000. It did.
Yeah.
When Bush was president, we were in a very deep recession. The NASDAQ was down over 65%. All of a sudden, 9/11, and we're going to get that guy Osama bin Laden dead or alive. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, everybody forgets about how crappy the economy was. The banksters get on the deal, and they start the real estate boom.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have any money? Can't afford a house? Don't worry about it. Sign here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and then we had to bail out the banksters. When all else fails, they take you to war.
That's right.
I'm saying to you and to everyone, get ready for World War III. Mm. What followed the Great Depression?
That's right. Yeah. WW2.
What followed the bust going on? When the bankster bust happened in the early 1900s, or World War I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this will be the war when they ask a guy that knew a little bit about, you know, the making the atomic bomb. What was his name? Einstein? What weapons will be used to fight the Third World War? He said, I don't know. But they'll be using sticks and stones to fight the Fourth.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, and as you're pointing out with Turkey, remember the World War I, they began that in Serbia, right? Or what? This little obscure area. So even though Turkey doesn't seem to be at the center of the stage, it doesn't have to begin in a conflict between major powers. It can begin with a very small side conflict like that. And people starting to pile on.
The Duke of what? What was his name?
Yeah, Archduke Ferdinand, yeah.
Ferdinand. Oh, my God. They killed the Archduke. Oh, my God.
Grab your gun. We're going to Europe.
Oh, the Archduke is dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. A Yankee Doodle Do or Die.
Always like the first part of Sergeant York, where he says, this ain't my fight, and I'm not going to kill anybody. because it wasn't our fight. But they'll get us drawn into that. You know, but they use that little conflict. They all wanted to get involved in that. And so they use any kind of pretense to get into that.
That murderous bastard, Woodrow Wilson, who gave us... and they got us into the war. Then we had a thing called the Federal Income Tax.
Yeah, and the Federal Reserve.
Didn't have it before that.
That's
still got it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You talk about dragflation. Tell people what the difference between stagflation, because we all know what stagflation was in the 70s, stagnant growth. What's the difference with dragflation?
The economy goes down. It's not stagnant. Mm-hmm. So the economy drags down, inflation goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have. And that's what it is. What's going on in the equity markets has no relationship to reality. Number one, the cheap money. And number two, the big companies are doing great. You know why?
No, go ahead. Why?
They have no competition.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, they shut it down.
That's it. They have no competition.
They're essential.
That's it.
That's right.
They have no merger and acquisition activity in 2021 is at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
They're buying up everything. The Blackstones, the Black Rocks, one after another. They didn't have these things when we were young guys. They didn't have private equity groups. They didn't have hedge funds. None of this existed before.
That's right.
They own everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And they give us back nothing.
That's right.
Some change. Yeah, go on. It's like Rockefeller throwing the kids a dime, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's a real key thing in that trend you're talking about, the unions. You know, it's the wages, stagnant wages, or, you know, declining really in real terms, declining significantly in purchasing power. And it's also the brutal conditions that they're making people operate under, you know, wearing the mask. It annoys me to go anywhere where they're serving food now or to see the people having to walk around with their masks on. It's like it makes me feel awful that even though they're allowing me for the time being to be there without wearing a mask, it doesn't matter if it's a fast food joint or if it's a restaurant. All these people who are waiters and waitresses and working at the place, they all have to wear masks. It makes me disgusted. I mean, this is like some dystopian. It's like the Hunger Games or something. There's something wrong about that, but the masks, mandates for the vaccines, and then not doing anything with the wages, I see that as a rising thing. And I think, wouldn't you think that we're going to have a lot of new unions forming, because a lot of these existing unions are sold out to the establishment.
Here's a story. Oh, yeah, they're all sold.
Yeah.
This is from the New York Times Wednesday. Starbucks fights push for a union. So they're starting even there again.
Mm-hmm.
People are earning nothing.
That's right.
Median household income declined at its fastest rate since they've been doing the numbers in 2020. The rich are getting richer.
Yeah. Yep. Now, and then they're just rubbing your nose in it with these mask mandates. It just makes me.
Exactly. Yeah. But look what we wrote about this in the Trends Journal. People quit, why they're quitting their jobs, because they have no life. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the average cost of a new car now is, according to J.D. Power?
I think it's $45,000, is it?
$40,638.
Okay.
$40,000. Now, you're making, we're paying them now $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
$15 an hour? What are you making? But, you know, you take home $62.50 a week and got a hernia after taxes and everything.
Yeah.
And you got no money.
That's right.
You can't buy this stuff. So going back to this article, when you read it too, I love the words that they use. They call the people working in Starbucks that are making coffee, you know what they call them, of course, barristers.
Mm-hmm.
Barristers, you're making coffee. When I was a kid, one of my, the greatest job I had, I couldn't wait to get it. I was a soda jerk at the candy store. I wrote about it in my Jizzy book at York's Candy Store, and I met Carol there too. All the kids after high school used to go to the soda fountain. That's where you used to go after class.
Mm-hmm.
I was a soda jerk. That's they called it.
Yeah, they probably paid you better than the fancy named coffee makers today, right?
A barrister? Save it, man. They give them these names and these nothing jobs, no life.
Yeah.
You don't move up the corporate ladder anymore because the big zone everything. All you are is a plantation worker on the global plantation of Slavelandia.
Yeah, that's right.
End of story.
That's right. Let's talk a little bit about the housing market, because that's one of the few places that some of the older generation have some equity in. We're able to build, at least on paper, some wealth there. But you point out the housing market crash is coming. What's happening to that? Because that's something that's going to affect a lot of people in the middle
class.
Well,
not the housing market crash, more of the commercial market crash.
Okay.
The commercial market's going to go down big.
Mm-hmm.
As we're speaking now, under 40% of the office occupancy, there's less than 40% office occupancy rate around the nation. So all those commercial buildings, and they were overbuilt before,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to go back. Even if they went back to 80%, you got 20% not commuting. The restaurant business, all the retail businesses that depended on this stuff, hospitality sector. Once upon a time, they used to have a thing called trade shows and conventions.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Well, they were great for cities, brought them in a lot of tax revenue, and businesses, the hospitality, restaurant, entertainment, gone. Mm-hmm. Gone. Mm-hmm. Dead. Dead. Now, on the real estate market end, we don't see a big crash. We're saying prices are going to go down because, as I mentioned earlier, when murderous George W. Bush, who should be brought up on war crimes, came into office and they fabricated the real estate boom back then. You could buy a house if you didn't have a job with the subprime mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
They were artificially propped up. This is a different prop up. It's supply and demand. Yes, when this thing crashes, prices are going to go down. But even if they go down 15 or 20%, they've gone up way more than that over the past year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have a crash in that. It's going to be a down. Everything is going to go down when they raise interest rates. The Federal Reserve knew that inflation was not temporary or transitory. They're saying it is because they want the equities to markets to go higher and say that, don't worry about it, you money junkies. We're going to keep pumping out monetary methadone that you don't have to pay hardly anything to get a jab with.
Yeah.
Look, they're raising interest rates around the world, one country after another. They're going to have to keep pushing it up because inflation's going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
the interest rates go up, the economy goes down. But here's the other side of it. When they go up, get ready for them to go down very sharply around early 2023.
Hmm. Oh, before the election. Yeah, the election.
Got it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's what they did with Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah, one. I was looking at it. It was the is an article that you had at Trends Research. Is a housing market crash coming? And it said that 78% of community bank executives think that there's going to be a crash in the next 4 years. But you don't think that it's going to be. Certainly, we know that it's not going to be as bad as the commercial real estate.
Yeah.
You got another article talking about how Florida hotels are losing billions. What you were just talking about, the convention business and other things, and even just travel, just in general, all of that being shut down. So that's going to be really, really bad. But you know, in terms of the housing market, you know, when this thing goes down because it's gone up so much, They're not. It's going to be a retrenchment, but not nearly as bad as these other. I mean, do you have any idea when they talk about this? I mean, what are they projecting? You've got 78% of them saying it's going to go down sometime in the next 4 years. Did they come up with a number, or they thought that an amount that they think it's going to drop down, or anything like that? Any kind of feeling?
They're making this stuff up.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah,
it's going to be.
They just know that sometime in the next 4 years
is
going to have.
We were talking about inflation. What? Over a year ago.
That's right. That's right. So it's inevitable that the rates are going to go up, and when that's going to go up, it's going to affect the housing markets seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
when the rates go up, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's finished. The markets are going to crash. Housing is going to go down. We're going to have a global meltdown. Oh, by the way, oil prices.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Look at them going up.
Yeah.
And it's not supply and demand. There's way more oil than you need.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the markets are being rigged. And who is it hurting the most? Do you think rich people look at the price of a gallon of gas?
No.
And what's your average price now in California? About $4.56.
Yeah, that's
a
right.
A gallon for regular.
And that one place is pretty isolated. It's on the coast there, that recreational drive that's there. They were charging, $8 a gallon or something like that for regular? They said they've always been high. But, again, it's kind of, what they can get away with. And that's what's happening right now. And again, this is what they're looking for, isn't it, Gerald? I mean, they want to make gasoline so expensive and rare, and even if they can, prohibit it so that people can't drive our cars. I mean, we're going to all have a nice-looking classic car that's going to be sitting in the front yard like the broken wagon wheels when you go out west, right? As a decoration. It's going to be a lawn ornament because you won't be able to drive it.
Now, it's going back to what's going on, though. Now Russia's shutting down again. They're locking down.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see more lock. This economy is going to go down big.
Yeah,
and these vaccine mandates. All right, you can't go into a restaurant in New York City and many other places without a vaccine passport.
Yep.
So let's say 40% of the people don't have vaccine passports. How's that for business?
Mm-hmm.
Business was rough enough in good times.
That's right. Oh yeah, they don't have that kind of margin.
No.
Yeah. Nowhere close to it.
No. So we're going to start seeing civil unrest like we've never seen before.
That's right. That's right.
And again, look what's going on in Italy with the people taking to the streets over there in the last few weeks. They refused to get the vaccine passport. And Italy is the toughest lockdown of everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know what they're calling the people there that are protesting? Fascists.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. A week ago, they said, you're going to have a vaccine or we're going to kick you out of your job, kick you out of society. It's coming everywhere. But people are really, it is coming to a head. And I think, when I look at this and we look at the cycle of things, I think they're pushing not only for a world war, but I think they're also pushing for civil wars everywhere. They want it really badly, or they wouldn't be doing this. Right.
I don't think they are doing it because they know what they're doing. I think they are doing it for two reasons. Number one, they're sociopaths, psychopaths. I told you about this guy that stole all this money from me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over. Everybody has their own story.
Mm-hmm.
There are psychopaths, sociopaths, and pathological liars. Then there's the power hungry, the people that get into politics. And the powerful hungry that want more money,
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a big scheme. The scheme is in their brain. Anything that they can do to control the people and make more money is all they're interested in. Oh, before I forget, very important. As you know, when you were here back in May, and you can see the photos from back then,
mm-hmm.
when you go, if you Google up freedompeacejustice.com, freedompeacejustice.com, the church that I began is the Universal Church of Freedom, Peace, and Justice. So the domain name is freedompeacejustice.com. Come Monday, we will be offering religious exemptions. And we've had an attorney also do a part of the religious exemption that shows it's against the Constitution not to provide a person of a religious belief their belief. So not only are we putting in the part about my body, my choice, and my I don't believe in this because of the gene therapy vaccination and taking the aborted cells and on and on. Not only that, but also we're putting in the constitutionality of the right for religious exemption. So we're going to be offering these. Mm-hmm. And again, it's freedompeacejustice.com.
Yeah, you know, they really are afraid of this. Jack Posobiec had a recording of these DOJ officials and saying, well, there's really not anything we can do about these religious exemptions. And so they've come up with some lies, you know, to see if you're consistent. Well, we got a list of products that we say were developed with the fetal cell lines. It turns out that virtually every one of those products, things like aspirin, existed before even any of these fetal cell lines existed. So they're lying to people about that. I had an employee of Bayer Aspirin send me their questionnaire, and Bayer had both the chemical and aspirin on there. So they listed their product twice, and they know that their product goes back to 400 BC. It was identified and isolated in the 1800s. It had nothing to do with fetal cell lines. So they're lying and deceiving people that way. And then the other thing that they're doing, Gerald, is after they're compelled to recognize a religious exemption, then they start a program of harassment on people. And yep. I've had a lot of people talk about, oh, yeah, we're going to be isolated, we're going to be masked, they're going to be testing all the time, and eventually they're going to increase the tests and they're going to make you start paying for the tests. I mean, this is really, really cynical and evil what they're doing to people.
It's cynical and evil. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's great, funny stuff. And this is a joke. Where is it? Let me see if I can find it here. Just had it. what they call people now that let me get this. Hold on 1 second.
We'll play a little bit of music here. We'll be back in a moment.
I wanted to show it to you. They had the Wall Street Journal did an article on what's going on with people. They call them schlubbly.
That's the new name for unvaccinated people.
Great article. Darn, what did I do with it?
Are they calling us schlubbly because we're not getting
schlubbly? And the story goes on about how this woman, she was a teacher, and then she was at home, and she eating a lot of cookies and candy, and she got soft and big, and her husband didn't get fat. She got soft and big.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And her husband doesn't want to have sex with her. So they're schlubbly. This is what the therapists are calling it. You're fat. Yeah. And that's what's happened to America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Too fat to fight.
That's right.
Besides the other part about not having sex. I can't say that word. But too fat to, you know. Anyway, that's this country, 78% of the people, according to the CDC, that were hospitalized with COVID were either obese or type 2 diabetics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
78%. And now the headline is the vaccine 90% effective for little kids. Oh, really?
Yeah, right.
According to the numbers, CDC, between May and September, May of 2020 and September of 2021, the grand total of 498 people under the age of 19 died allegedly of the virus.
That's right.
498 people from May of 2020 to September 2021 out of 75 million people.
Yeah, I know.
And the vaccine's effective? What do you mean it's effective? People aren't dying from the thing.
They can tell you with the kids who don't have any risk from this. They can tell you that if they didn't die from the vaccine, that saved them from the virus. And it was Marty McCary, who was at Johns Hopkins, I believe, that went back and looked at this when it was about 500. They've almost got it up to when it was 400. They've almost got it up to 500. Went back and looked at every single one of those cases. And so there's not a single one of those reported deaths from COVID in children that had anything to do with COVID. They all had a lot of other issues involved there. They died with COVID, maybe not even with COVID, but with a positive PCR test for COVID. And that's really what's behind those shots. So they have zero risk, but they do not have a zero risk from this vaccine. The vaccine is very real. It's very toxic. It's one of the reasons why you see this whole thing about myocarditis. We got people who are middle-aged, elderly, all different ages that are dying from myocarditis. But the reason they focus on it with the young people is because they can't come up with any other excuse. Everybody else, they can blame it on something else. Oh, you're 30 years old and you had a heart attack even though you're perfectly healthy. Well, it wasn't the vaccine. But for these kids that are teenagers and high school athletes and everything, they die with a myocarditis. It's pretty clear what it is. And I can't deny it, but they ignore it. Nevertheless, they ignore it and they press ahead.
They're going to cook the numbers.
Yeah. Oh, it's just awful.
Look, I say let's bring back some thalidomide. And all you women, keep taking that estrogen. It's great for you.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, well,
this is
I mentioned earlier. Sorry, go ahead.
This is from the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
In secret vaccine contracts with government, Pfizer took hard line and pushed for profits. You saw that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all this is. Their drug deal is.
That's right. Yeah.
Their drug deal is.
Yeah, there was a story, Gerald, I talked about back in February when it first came out. There was an investigative journalist unit in the UK. They found that in Argentina and in Brazil and a third Latin American country, that they released some information to them and said, look at how they're blackmailing us on this. Because if you don't get the vaccine, your country's going to be basically cut off from the world. And so they were demanding all kinds of protection against fraud, against negligent manufacturing processes, not just from this untested vaccine. And they wanted foreign assets, sovereign assets in other countries and everything. So that was exposed then. Now it's just come out again. Another organization has gotten the actual documents, and it's not just these Latin American countries, but it's even the EU and other countries, and now they've gotten unredacted documents that have been leaked out. I think this thing is going to eventually blow sky high, but I don't know how much damage they're going to do with this.
Now, they'll cover it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Cover it up. Look how they have destroyed this world with the COVID war.
Yes, I know.
I mean, we're talking about what's going on in supply chain disruptions. We're talking about the people losing jobs. We're talking about all the hospitality sector, all the emotional, physical, and spiritual damage it's done to people.
Yes.
It's beyond the belief of anything that okay. I got an idea for a movie. We're going to start scaring everybody with this COVID, and we're going to lock down everything. And the first thing the people are going to do is run to the supermarket to buy toilet paper. All right?
Yeah.
If I make up a story like that, I say, Salenti, what the hell is wrong with you? Hey, they're going to run out and buy toilet paper. What are you out of your mind?
It's like Wag the Dog, right? It's a pageant, right? Except we can call it Wag the Wuhan, right?
Wag the Wuhan. Again, that's the other thing that people don't talk about. I mentioned it to me. I used to be on Hong Kong TV throughout 2019 when the protests were going on in Hong Kong. 1 million people were taken to the streets out of 7.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get 1 million people out of 332 million in America to take to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be talking, off air with the reporter. So listen, what are you guys doing? We're not going to stop, Mr. Salenti. We're going to keep fighting. We're not going to let them take over. Oh, Chinese Lunar New Year 2020. Year of the rat. Oh, remember those people falling down in Wuhan, right?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Lockdown Wuhan, lockdown this place, that place in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Lockdown Hong Kong, the protests were over.
That's right.
They passed the security bill. Finito. Done. Done. Oh, mm-hmm. And by the way, according to the numbers, what do they got? 1.4 billion people in China? According, you know how many people have died of the COVID? Allegedly, according to their numbers?
How many?
Around 6,000.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when they had videos surface, they're pushing around social media of you know, young people walking on just collapsing on the street. I said, that looks totally fake. I think we're being had here. You know, whatever, to lock down the economy was absolutely the wrong thing to do. Even if it had been the most deadly pathogen and it was deliberately designed and deliberately released, the worst thing we could do would be to lock everything down. And you remember, you're talking 2 weeks to save what? To save the hospitals, are going to flatten the curve and make this last longer. You had the Swedish epidemiologist said, why would you want to flatten the curve and make it last longer? Well, we got to save the hospitals. What are they doing now? They're crushing the hospitals deliberately with these mandates.
Yep.
It's just insane. Everything is upside down. And there's no logic about it. And the more this goes on, there's the vast majority of people in this society and every other country that are fully invested in this. And getting angrier and angrier, those of us who see what's happening with this. That's the crazy
tech,
thing.
Big tech is the biggest. They were the first ones to lock down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that little clown Dorsey who was supposed to go to South Africa in February of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, the cover of our magazine, remember this breaks out Lunar New Year 2020. The next week, our cover of our magazine was the Trends Journal, coronavirus, 106 dead in China.
Yeah.
And our next line was 1.4 billion still alive.
Yep.
And what do you tell me 106 people died?
Yeah. And lockdown. Still so alive, then, but lockdown under house arrest.
So then what happened when it hit the United States? It hit Kirkland, Washington, elder care homes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they started locking down. And that's when Dorsey and Cook and Zuckerberg and all, we're sending our people away. Don't come to work. Google, don't come to work. I keep forgetting that guy's name, the Google guy.
Sundar Pichai. Sundar Pichai.
Pichai.
Yeah, yeah. He sounds like Pikachu.
Pichai.
You know, he's it's like Pikachu.
Look at these. Could you imagine these people telling us man to man what to do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
It wouldn't last for a second. And anyway, they were the first to close down. And look how big tech has benefited from this.
Oh, yeah.
From Zoom to online shopping. And they were the first ones to call, stay at home, stay at home, don't come to work. Oh, and by the way, again, totally forgotten, as they lock down and still do in Australia and other places, your chances of getting it outside without a mask are less than 1%.
That's right. And yet we have our CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, saying that even after these kids down to the age of five are vaccinated, we're still going to have to keep them in masks. And that just makes me want to throw up. I mean, the physiological damage they're doing to the kids, the psychological damage that they're doing them at that age. One person said, you know, my kid is in kindergarten and, you know, preschool and stuff. So it's spent a quarter of their life wearing a mask already. The damage that's going to be done to these kids, not being able to read other people's emotions and faces and not to have human contact with other people, I mean, this is just incalculable. It is like B.F. Skinner, the kinds of experiments that he did on his kids, you know, treating them like animals. And that's what we're allowing to have happen. It's just amazing.
The people have lost their fight.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
People have lost, and it's global. It's not only America. They've lost their fight. I mean, they get the groups going out. But again, if we don't unite, we're done.
Yes.
We're finished.
That's right.
If we don't unite under one umbrella to fight this thing, and again, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men since Samuel Adams.
Yeah.
And we are that irate, tireless minority.
And the good news is that's about 15% that are hardcore anti-vax right now. You know, the numbers go up, but that's kind of soft after you get up above the 15%. But even the people who are opposing us, so it looks like there's a real hardcore 15%. That's a pretty good base, right?
That's a very solid base.
What's that?
Again, when the American Revolution happened, 5% of the people supported it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, that is something that is positive. And I think that, you know, the people who understand what's going on, the people who are working hard and are industrious, I think we're going to build this back better. I think we will be the ones. They're not going to build their society, their dystopian thing. I'm optimistic that we're going to do it because we know what's going on. Yeah, we have to. Our backs are against the wall, and once you put somebody up against the wall, you know, people are going to get really serious about this, and these are the people that are paying attention to this are the people who are going to do something about it. The rest of these people can stay in their little lock-in in their home, house arrest, and they can play with the metaverse that Zuckerberg is going to create for them on Facebook or whatever. They're going to be just dropouts. They'll be like people who are drug addicts. They'll have an empty life. They'll be non-playable characters, even though they're in a metaverse.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. And what this thing is doing is it's as you were talking about the little children. Could you imagine growing up? I see them walking around over here.
I know.
Little kids with masks on outside. I'm heartbroken.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's become a security blanket for them. It really has. Eric Peterson of EP Autos used to talk. He said, yeah, they're face blankies, you know, and he was pointing out how it was a security blanket for these adults. But the really tragic thing is how they're making this a security blanket for these little kids growing up this way. It's just child abuse is all it is. And if we let them do that to our kids.
I was up in Massachusetts this past Sunday and Stockbridge. And there's a place I used to go to, Red Lion Inn. And the mask mandates were so strong. And I estimated at least 70% of the people outside on the streets were wearing masks in Massachusetts.
Wow.
Or Massachusetts, whatever you want to call it.
Massachusetts. you mentioned that you were looking at getting some property somewhere else outside of the New York area. Have you focused on any general area or anything?
Yeah, I'm thinking of St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm. Florida.
I'm not buying property. I want to go there to spend the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, where I am up here, it's very old.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it down there. And I like that old feeling, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the oldest cities down there in St. Augustine. And, of course, you know, what's going to happen is, and you know it as well, once we get into coal season, all the coals, any sniffle is going to be identified as COVID, and everybody's going to panic and be running around crazy. So, you know, that's another reason to get to, right now, Florida is probably the most rational place of any place in terms of pushing back against this insanity. So that's a pretty good move. Spend the winter there. See what happens.
I can't stand it up here anymore.
Yeah.
No, it's no fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand. Well, Gerald, it's great talking to you. Always is. And, folks, if you want to know what's happening, there's a massive amount. We only scratched just a little bit of the surface of what's in this week's Trends Journal, and you'll find that at trendsresearch.com. I think the best publication that's out there, certainly the most extensive, and always ahead of the curve. Thank you so much, Gerald Slinty. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me on. It's always great. And thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerald. All right, folks, I'm not going to go to a commercial break because we've just got a couple of minutes here. And I just want to talk a little bit. You know, I mentioned these Nazi experiments. Do you realize that this is still going on? I mean, you know, we've had the famous experiments that they did back in the 1950s. Remember Operation Sea Spray, San Francisco, how you had the Navy release some toxins there? As that is not really a problem. You know, this is not lethal or anything. It resulted in the city's 800,000 residents getting a very heavy dose of a chemical, and it had clouds of a bacteria that they said, well, it's harmless, except that it wasn't exactly harmless. A week after spraying, you had 11 people admitted to the now-defunct Stanford University Hospital in San Francisco with severe urinary tract infection, resistant to the limited antibiotics available at that point in time. One man who's recovering from prostate surgery, developed complications of heart infection as it colonized his heart valves. His would be the only death during the aftermath of the experiment, but Stanford published a report of the outbreak, noting that the isolation of a red pigment-producing bacterium from the urine of human beings was of interest as a curious clinical observation. Later, they continued to see repeated occurrence of this, and eventually they put it together as to what this was. Now, these types of experiments have continued by our own government against our own people without letting you know. And so we have DHS. We're right in the middle of a experimental releasing of gas on New York citizens in 120 locations, you know, just to do a simulation of a biological attack. No, nothing malevolent about that whatsoever, right? You understand where our government is, and you understand why, at this point in time, it's not just these things that are being released in New York City, but it's the fact that they have released against us these toxic injections. This is what is happening with this vaccination thing is a reprehensible biowarfare attack. It originated with Trump. It escalated under Biden. And that's what this is. Make no mistake about it. As they try to come back and say, yeah, okay, we did some gain-of-function research, and but now we pull it back, and you know they're playing the here it is, but here it isn't type of game. No, no, no. They're criminals. Absolute criminals. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.